Happy Halloween, folks, and welcome to Dead Pin Radio. I'm the Creepy Kentuckian.
And I am Uncle Bill.
And we got a splendid Halloween pre-show, if you will.
Yeah, not only are we bringing back some of the most revered, you know, programming that we've done in the past, such as Dial H for Horror, which will be in this program.
It's actually only our second episode of Dial H for Horror.
But for some reason, we had some fan feedback that said that they really liked it, at least a couple people, so we decided to just do it again.
That's right. And if more people like it, it may be a regular segment on the show. But we'll get to that a little bit later. Yeah. We got horror news. A pretty good amount of it.
Yeah, we're crammed full of horror news.
Yeah, we'll get to that in just a second. DVD reviews, though. We got a ton of DVD reviews, and we made sure to, you know, give you a good selection of stuff to possibly choose from.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell's wrong with us, because normally we only review 4 films a week. Yeah. But for some reason,
we doubled it this week.
Yeah. It's Halloween. It's the Halloween show. It's a big show. We want to go ahead and, you know, review as much as we can.
One of our favorite horror comedy filmmakers, a guy by the name of Chris Seaver, we're reviewing one of his movies that is unreleased so far. It's going to be coming out next year from Tempe Entertainment. This one is The House on Bone Jack Hill.
And we also have a film that I think we both can agree on here a little bit later. It's called Left in Darkness.
That's right.
Which is a film from Anchor Bay.
Yeah, IDT Entertainment. Mm-hmm. We have a pretty different show slash, I don't know what you would call it.
I'd say a retro Munsters type show.
Yeah, they send us like a best of DVD of their show, which I think airs online. We'll get to that a little bit later. The Gooligans.
Mm-hmm. And also the last in a trilogy of really amazing Asian horror films. Mm-hmm. This one comes to us from Park Chan-woo.
Yeah, it's confusing.
There's about 4 or 5 different ways, but this one's Lady Vengeance from Tartan.
We have one from Axless Productions. This one is a independent short zombie flick known as Season of the Dead.
Also, an amazing, amazing slasher film that you don't get to see slasher films like this anymore, and there's probably a really good reason for that. This one's called Jigsaw.
That's right. Yeah, that's definitely a different slasher film. And we've got another short film here. This one is only around 10 minutes in length. Comes to us from the great country of Australia. This one is Foresta Rosa.
And last but certainly not least is a sort of a cult classic film. It comes to us from a guy by the name of Richard Stanley, and this one is called Dust Devil.
It's a 5-disc set.
Yeah, it is.
It's a verse of cinema. So, a lot of DVDs to get to. And we have a special guest this week by the name of Mick Garris, who is the creator of the Masters of Horror series, and we'll have him on special interview a little bit later.
Yeah, and if you don't know who Mick Garris is, you're stupid!
You don't know shit!
No, it's a really, really good interview, and I think all of y'all need to listen to it to figure out what's going to happen with the new Masters of Horror series coming out.
Because it starts tonight.
Yeah, it starts tonight.
Yeah. With Toby Hooper's episode, which I know we're both looking forward to.
Yeah, since we both enjoyed Dance of the Dead so much.
So, with that, let's get into the week that is this week.
In news.
I just wanted to remind people really quick that Jake West's Pumpkinhead 3, Ashes to Ashes, will premiere on the Sci-Fi Channel this Saturday, which is tomorrow night, October 28th, at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the mothership.
Mm-hmm.
Sci-Fi Channel. So I'm looking forward to it simply because Gary Tunnicliffe's effects is freaking awesome in it.
Yeah, he did the effects for Feast.
Pumpkinhead looks better than it did in the original Pumpkinhead. I think we can both safely say. Just hope it's halfway as good as the movie.
Isn't that bizarre, though, if you think about it? Because I said that the monster in Feast kind of looked like some kind of bizarre variation of Pumpkinhead.
Right.
It turns out that Gary Tunnicliffe did that, and then he's going to do the Pumpkinhead 3.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, though. I think we need more Pumpkinhead movies.
We do.
I've come to that realization that needs to happen.
We need one called Gourdhead. That'd be a good one.
Yeah.
Anyway, the eighth and final film to be lined up for the After Dark Horror Fest, which I'm pretty sure somebody asked us about in the fan mail group, has been chosen, and it is called Wicked Little Things. By the way, this fest runs from the weekend of November 17th to the 19th, and I've checked up on where it'll be in Kentucky, so we know all this stuff now, and we will make it there somehow or another.
No, we won't. It's in Lexington. That's the only place it is.
It's actually in Newport, too, but I don't really care because we're going to it in either place. So the thing about it is, the last film, which is called Wicked Little Things, was actually for a long time called something else. It was called Zombies when it was first released, which was supposed to be the film that Tobe Hooper was supposed to direct, but never did.
Yeah.
And eventually,
they couldn't pay him enough.
Yeah.
He told me that personally.
It eventually wound up, you know, he departed the project, and it was rewritten by a guy by the name of Ben Nadeva and helmed by the Forsaken director and Covenant scripter, J.S. Cardone.
All right.
So that is the last, eighth and final film for the After Dark Horror Fest. And I can go ahead and tell you the other seven films real quick. You got Unrest, Penny Dreadful, The Grave Dancers, The Hamiltons, Reincarnation, Dark Ride, and The Abandoned. Those are all films for the After Dark Horror Fest.
So be sure to go to your local theater for the After Dark Horror Fest, motherfuckers.
I'd love to know how they're going to do that, though. I haven't yet figured that out. You can't have that many movies all together.
It's like you're going to have a serious case of numb ass.
It's like 8 hours, I think they're talking about doing it.
It'll be longer than 8 hours.
It could be
16 hours if it's 8 different movies.
There has to be some catch to the way they're doing it.
If it's short movies, yeah, I can understand that. But I don't know. Shit. I mean, that takes some diehard fucking horror fans to sit through all 8 movies.
Maybe they're breaking it up like from during the whole weekend somehow. Like that show.
What I thought they were going to do is basically you'd have to pay for each movie, you know.
I hope not. That's
or maybe a double feature where you buy a ticket and get to see two of the movies, something like that.
That'd saw the preview for it. It seems to me like they said there was something like, you know, it's supposed to be 8 films, but I don't remember if they said how it was going to be set up in the preview.
We'll probably find out.
Yeah.
For any of you YouTuber fans out there, you can go and check out the new Day of the Dead trailer on YouTube. I don't know what to say about the movie. It's directed by Steve Miner, who's actually a fairly good director. But I don't know, man. It doesn't seem like a movie that's going to be in theaters. It doesn't look like it, at least. It looks something along the lines of Creepshow 3.
Most anyone who's seen that trailer has gone on about it pretty bad. And unless they change something very drastically, it does look amateurish at best.
I think the Doolsons are involved in the new Day of the Dead.
That bullshit copyright.
Yeah, but the trailer looks pretty pathetic, and if you want to check it out, just go to YouTube and search for Day of the Dead remake, and it'll pop right up.
Here's some more wonderful Tobe Hooper news, by the way. A direct-to-DVD series entitled The Texas Chainsaw Chronicles will be released, and during a recent interview, Tobe Hooper confirms that the project's existence and states that he'll be acting as an executive producer on the endeavor. There's also a hint at another big screen family romp, which as to say means that there will be some kind of sequel to the prequel, I guess, for Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Sequel to the remake.
Yes. Well, sequel to the prequel. It'll be like the third in the trilogy of shit that's recently started.
Yeah. But I don't understand, okay. If you're going to do that, then why don't you just let Tobe Hooper direct it? If you want
the third, you mean? Or
because
the
series is going down. They can say what they want to. The beginnings, compared to the remake, did pretty pathetic. So I think they're going to have some sort of gimmick if they want to continue with it.
Well, he's also planning on apparently doing a book on the making of the original Chainsaw.
Yeah.
And the last effort, he says, will be co-scripted by Kim Hinkle, who was, of course, the co-writer of the original Chainsaw. And it's supposed to show like a view from inside the film and how it was made and all this stuff.
Well, you can't really blame Tobe Hooper because Texas Chainsaw Massacre, as much as we've talked about him on here, is one of the most influential horror movies of all time.
Not only that, it's one of the best horror films of all time, too.
And, of course, he really didn't do much after that. But I don't blame him. I would be exactly the same way if it was me. I mean, I would... evidently, there's just a big resurgence in Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So, you know, anybody can think of doing that. I mean, you can't really blame Tobe Hooper. I would do the same thing, and I would buy the damn book.
Well,
you know,
it is kind of true that he got is just as much as anybody else on that film hosed in the in the monetary aspect of it. So you can't blame him for wanting to come back and try to make some money now.
That's true. And it seems like there were so many other people like doing all these documentaries out now. And you can't really blame him for wanting to do something like that. This weekend also, though, Saw 3 opens up in theaters. And a special trailer debuts before the Saw 3 movie. Now, this trailer is for Eli Roth's Hostel 2. Now, the funny thing about this trailer is it's going to be completely in German. Lionsgate marketing guy Tim Palin said that
this is marketing genius.
German is more guttural and harsh.
No shit.
I think that a lot of people will be taken aback, but with the success of the first Hostel, there will be no confusion as to whether the movie is in English.
Let me tell you something. That movie couldn't scare me if they brought fucking Hitler back to life and he did the voiceover for it. How's that?
Taylor also said that the trailer makes the pic seem more European and exotic. It's also a nod to the anti-American sentiment sweeping Europe and beyond.
Honestly, though, it's pretty easy for anybody to understand why it is they're doing this and what they're trying to cash in on.
Yeah.
You don't have a trailer in German unless you're trying to set a tone for something, and I think anybody has any sense knows what that is.
Yeah. I don't know. I don't like Hostel, but you think that's a good idea or you think it's silly?
I think it's a ridiculous marketing ploy, really, but what about Hostel isn't ridiculous anyway, so it kind of fits right in there.
That's true. So, you know, everybody can wait for Hostel 2 next year sometime. It's going to be out.
Everybody look forward to that. I look forward to it. Okay, here's some news about Lewis Jackson's cult killer Santa film, Christmas Evil. Apparently, there will be a signing event of the disc street date Tuesday, November 14th at Los Angeles Laser Blazer.
Right.
That's 10584 West Pico Boulevard. Jackson will be on hand between 7 to 9 p.m. to sign copies of the DVD, for which Synapse also provided the final official specs. There'll be an audio commentary by Jackson, bonus audio commentary by Jackson, filmmaker, Christmas Evil fan, John Waters, edition tapes, storyboards, original screening, blah, 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 blah. So, go buy Laser Blazer if you want to get a signed copy of Christmas Evil.
And if anybody can get me and Uncle Bill copies, two copies we need, we'll give you a deadpit.com shirt and a signed bucket of KFC chicken.
That's right. That does not include the chicken, though.
No, we got to eat the chicken.
That's just a bucket.
Because the shipping costs too much, and it'd probably, you know, be rotted by the time.
You'd probably die if you ate it.
Yeah. We got some great news on the Saw movies, though. We was talking about Saw earlier. The Saw sequels, from now on, Darren Bousman, Lee Winnell, and James Wan are officially finished with the Saw series. They wanted to wrap it all up in a self-contained trilogy while allowing other filmmakers to continue the franchise. Contrary to reports, Tobin Bell has not signed on for any sequels, but stated that he would be more than willing to play Jigsaw again. I'm sure he would. The original cut of Saw 3 ran over 3 hours. That's what it says. That'd be like torture right there itself, watching it. And Bousman is hell-bent on releasing a director's cut on DVD. So the 3-hour version will be available on DVD. DVD.
What a bunch of bullshit. I just want to say that for that. That's almost like when they said, you know, Friday 13th 4 is going to be the final Jason movie.
Right.
You know those assholes will keep making those movies as long as they make money.
Yeah.
Basically, when people say that, what that means is something like, we're going to take about 2 years off. We're not going to have one every Halloween like we have been. Then we'll just come back and make some more money off of it.
Yeah, because you can always come up with more ways to torture people.
I mean, that's the easiest thing in the world to come up with, death scenes like that. Yeah.
You can stick, you know, like a freaking like 8-inch nail up somebody's dick hole. And twist it.
You can stick like a glass barbed wire dildo up somebody's ass.
I think that'd be horrendous to happen to me. I mean, I've had nightmares about that.
Those weren't nightmares. Okay.
Yeah, it would. It happened now.
Okay, I guess the big news story that has been going on for the last week or so is in regards to the Hellraiser remake, which, if anybody didn't know, Clive Barker is actually going to pen the Hellraiser remake. And I thought this would be a great idea for a poll question on the board, and I thought about putting it up. Does it make Clive Barker a more or less dick that he's pinning the remake to that film? I was just curious about that. But here's some of the newest quotes that we've got about this film. Clive Barker says, when I'm done with Gospels, and by that he means the Scarlet Gospels, which is his newest novel.
Yeah, he's not going to church.
Yeah, I'll begin writing Hellraiser. As while I'm doing the paintings for Aberrant, Part 3, which is a painting series that he does too, I just wouldn't be at peace with myself if I gave this remake writing gig to someone else. And I've always had in the back of my head what I wanted to do. There are things which going into the movie which I've had tucked in my brain for years. Said, I haven't talked to anybody else involved in the original about this, including Doug Pinhead Bradley. I'm going to write it and see how it goes. So apparently that dispels some rumors about whether Bradley will be in it or not. And also when asked if he'll have any of the themes, characters, or events revealed in the original film, he said, oh yeah, of course, do you really think I wouldn't do that?
Well, if they're going to remake it, I'd rather have him involved than not, you know. sort of like if someone remade The Fog and it wasn't John Carpenter, which did happen.
Mm-hmm.
See how bad that was.
I don't know. I don't even know where I stand on this yet. I haven't really given that much thought because...
The thing about Hellraiser is, though, I mean, I think we watched the movie again a couple years ago, and it's not dated at all. The effects look great in it, and I don't see why it would need, I mean, what would need updating.
Plus, it's not a bad film. It seems to me, if you were going to remake a film that was that, you know, young, you'd want to remake something that's really horrible.
Yeah. I'm thinking, like, if they're going to do another Hellraiser remake, I guess, it would probably, they'd probably incorporate a lot of CG in it. You know, the Cenobites.
I can only imagine the way it's going to turn out with the box, you know, and all that, that they use the CG for that transformation scenes and stuff.
Yeah.
Which, yeah.
But if this does happen, maybe that's the end of the horrendous direct-to-video sequels that they're doing.
Yeah, I'd say that'll definitely end that for a while, anyway.
I guess we should take a quick break, though. We have a few more news topics to get to. And we'll get right to the Mick Garris interview here in a minute on DeadPitch.com.
The Return of the Living Dead.
More brain.
Do you want a party? It's party time. We got a party. It's party time. Do you want a party?
They're back from the grave and ready to party. The Return of the Living Dead, rated R.
Welcome back to the special Halloween edition of DeadPit.com.
Happy Halloween, folks. I hope you have a happy Halloween this Tuesday. Mm.
Enjoy the Halloween festivities.
Got something on a new film that I really am interested in seeing. This one's called The Mist. I don't believe we've talked about that. Kind of an older news story. It's an adaptation of Stephen King's novel from 1980. It's being adapted and directed by Frank Darabont, who you may remember, the guy that did other Stephen King movies, The Green Mile and The Shawshank Redemption.
So the guy knows what the hell he's doing then.
Yeah,
he?
Two great movies. Here is a bit of a synopsis. Suddenly, a violent storm sweeps across the lake and ends as abruptly as it begun. Then comes the mist, creeping slowly, inexorably into town. Then comes the mist, creeping slowly into town, where it settles and waits, trapping you in the supermarket with dozens of others, cut off from your families and the world.
They make a movie called The Piss Fog. You know, when it's really cold outside and you go take a piss and that fog comes up out of it.
It sounds a lot like The Fog. But honest to God, it was a Stephen King novel from 1980. So, that's the same year The Fog was made.
Interesting.
John Carpenter? Does sound a lot like The Fog, but Frank Darabont definitely knows what the fuck he's doing, so I'm sure it'll be good. What's also interesting about that is I think Frank Darabont also had a writing credit on Nightmare on Elm Street 3, Dream Warriors.
That is interesting, and if that's true, that guy's the greatest man ever. He's done all those movies and had something to do with Nightmare on Elm Street 3. Okay.
It's killer.
Our good buddies over at Code Red
wanted
to bring us news that they've announced that they were going to bring the cult horror movie Boarding House
Yes, that's right.
To DVD.
Mm.
directed by John Wintergate, this 1982 production is notorious as a shot-on-tape flick that somehow made it onto big-screen release. Because of its age, the Code Red folks advise that this will not look like today's high-def features, so please understand if it isn't pristine. Also, since this was shot on video, it will be presented full frame, which is how Wintergate wants it presented. Boarding House also stars a director using the pseudonym Hawk Adley as the owner of the domicile, which was once the site of horrible murders and is now plagued by a ghostly presence that slaughters sexy girls who move in.
Oh, God.
Extras will include an audio commentary by Wintergate and star Kalasu, moderated by journalist Greg Goodsell. Yeah. Interviews with the duo by film historian Jeff McKay and more. In addition, the Code Red blog reports that a theatrical trailer has been added to its upcoming DVD of Devil Times 5, coming November 21st.
Right.
And The Forest, tentatively set for November 7th. That damn movie's been tentatively set now for about 3 months.
That's something that we definitely have in hand that we're going to be reviewing next week.
We both got it.
Don't go in the woods alone.
And Code Red DVD is one of the few companies out there that are giving these cult movies that you never, ever thought would get a DVD release. And they're releasing them in special editions. So, highly recommend checking out all of their releases. They're one of the few companies out there that's doing this sort of thing. So,
yeah, they picked up a lot of the slack with these other companies.
They actually, interesting enough, I got an email recently about them picking up the Brett Leonard movie, The Dead Pit. And they'll be releasing that.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, we did get an email.
They're releasing that sometime in the near future.
Which I swear to God, and I don't care how many emails I get about this, as far as I know, has nothing to do with our name of the show.
No, it doesn't. Really doesn't at all. Okay, another remake, Near Dark. Platinum Dunes are set to remake the classic 80s vampire flick. Actor Lance Henriksen talked about what they should do with their planned remake, which he mentioned it was one of his favorite films he was in. And he said if they were smart, they would get a hold of himself, Bill Paxton, Jeanette Goldstein, and do something that starts as a prequel to Near Dark. So that's the idea that he has. Lance Henriksen says that he wants to be involved in this.
And we all know Lance Henriksen's a fucking marketing genius.
Lance Henriksen needs to be involved in it. You know why? Because any movie with Lance Henriksen in it makes it seem good.
I swear to God.
Even if it's not.
That's true, though. Like, anything with Lance Henriksen, I usually
like.
I watch
a fucking movie. How many fucking Sasquatch movies has Lance Henriksen been in, by the way?
At least two.
Recently.
Recently, yeah.
Because isn't he in Sasquatch Mountain, though?
Yep.
Then he's in Sasquatch. I got that over there. Sasquatch Mountain, Annabelle. That's three in the past like 3 years.
That's true.
Lance Henriksen likes fucking Sasquatches.
Sasquatch Mountain. You think about that for a minute.
Lance Henriksen's killer.
That's like saying Werewolf Hill.
I want to get Lance Henriksen on this show sometime.
Yeah, that'd be awesome if we could do that. Yeah. But here's the thing about Near Dark and that remake. There's another movie where it's a little bit less well-known than some of the other ones they're going to remake, like Hellraiser. Mm-hmm. But still, it's not that old, and it really doesn't. There's really not any reason that I can see to remake it except make money. Which,
yeah, but it's really not got that name to it, really. Is it?
That's true, too. But if they remake Near Dark, I don't really see how they can improve on it. It was just a basic vampire film. There's not much CG you could add to that story, either.
CG. They can always add CG.
Well, yeah. I guess they could if you look at mortuaries. I guess I got one more thing I want to mention that's not really news. One real brief mention from a guy that runs Pit of Horror, and he wanted me to mention that he's got a new film out, and it's called Job, as in, you know, the Book of Job. If you go over to faithkills.com or myspace.com/JobTheMovie, check out his new film. The guy's name's John Gray. And enjoy. There's a press release and all kinds of press field fun at his MySpace page. You can check that out.
Go on and talk about some stuff that's going on this weekend. The Atlanta Horror Fest is this weekend in Atlanta, Georgia.
Shit, I forgot all about that, too.
A ton of movies. There's going to be some bands there and some more creamy horror goodness. Go to AtlantaHorrorFest.com. Check that shit out. want to go for all the details. Now, screening I got to get to. The Grindhouse Film Festival Special Edition at the San Francisco, California's Castro Theater at 429 Castro Street. This is Monday, October 30th. They will have special 35mm print screenings of 1982's Pieces and Lucio Fulci's film from 1981, The Beyond.
Those two movies together would be great.
$7 is all it is, folks. If you want to check that out anywhere near the San Francisco area, that's a San Francisco treat.
It really is. I'll tell you this much, too. Pieces has got one of the most fucking bizarre and just great classic endings of any horror film I've ever seen.
Yep.
Well, next we've got the Halloween DVD list. That's right, for October the 31st, next Tuesday. This is your DVD list coming out.
Can't wait.
You got coming out Dorm of the Dead from Howl Films, which I've heard about a little bit. And you got Future Kill coming out from Subversive, which we'll be doing a review of soon. You got The Hitchhiker Volume 3 two-disc set from Warner, which I don't know, we've never really talked about the Hitchhiker series that much, but that was a great, another one of those kind of, like, Tales from the Dark Side, Tales from the Crypt series.
Another one that was played, USA Network used to play it all the damn time.
And you got The Devil's Reign coming out from Dark Sky. I believe we got that.
I'll be reviewing that soon.
Yeah, you've got Tales from the Crypt, the complete fifth season, three-disc set from Warner Brothers. And finally, you've got, there's a couple more things coming out, but the only one of any interest would be the two-disc special edition of Daughters of Darkness from Blue Underground.
Yeah, we don't get nothing from Blue Underground.
That's right.
Oh, wow.
That is your DVDs.
So now we're
Baby
on.
Baby Bud Bud.
We're on to the interview with Mr. Mick Garris, creator of The Masters of Horror.
Now, this guy, for those of you who don't know and haven't been on the board, has been around doing this stuff since, you know, late 70s. In early 80s, he did roundtables for his own show, which you're on the board too, where he's interviewed people like Carpenter and Landis and Cronenberg and just...
Joe Dante.
Yeah, tons of... He was doing this kind of documentary-style film work behind the scenes of films like The Howling in the Fog before that was even considered for DVDs or anything.
Worked very closely with Stephen King.
Yeah.
Steven Spielberg.
And if you didn't know, like he said, he is the executive producer and co-creator of Masters of Horror.
We talk about all that. Yeah. And you can hear it right now on DeadPit.com.
How did you get your start in the horror business?
Well, you know, I've been a fan ever since I was a kid. The first movie I remember seeing, I must have been about five when I saw Son of Kong on television. And my first opportunity really came, well, I was doing writing for a lot of different magazines, Cine Fantastique and others, and I was writing for the Z Channel magazine. That was the first pay TV station in Los Angeles. And I ended up hosting an interview show there where we had, well, a lot of the interviews have ended up on some of the Masters of Horror DVDs. Larry Cohen, John Landis, we had people like David Cronenberg and Spielberg and all these different people on. So that's kind of what first opened the door, and then Spielberg was the first person to ever hire me as a writer, as a screenwriter on Amazing Stories. So that kind of opened the doors for me.
Yeah. I know you did a lot of behind-the-scenes work on movies like The Fog and The Howling.
That's right, yeah.
So how did you get involved in the, you know, inner workings of these films?
Well, it really came out of that Z Channel experience. I met a lot of filmmakers there, and it enabled me to get a job doing publicity at one of the PR companies that was very prominent at the time in film and still is. So that led me to getting a job in publicity, doing specialized publicity, going to science fiction and horror conventions in the days of Star Wars and Alien, things like that.
Mm.
And so that kind of opened up the doors there. And I got hired at Avco Embassy and then at Universal to do specialized publicity and marketing stuff for the genre. And I would hire myself to do the making ofs because I didn't cost anything. And that's where I kind of learned how to make narrative out of little pieces of film, put them together and make them into a story.
Was there any anything from these film sets that you remember, you know, just being interesting or not making it onto the actual final cut of the film?
Well, that would often happen. You know, I remember when John Landis made The Three Amigos. It's not a horror film, but that's probably the most notable thing that changed. He shot all this wonderful period stuff in the movie they were making and all, and played it for an audience, and, you know, insiders loved it, people who knew about the making of movies and the like, but a general audience didn't, and so he felt that some of the best material really had to be cut out because, you know, ultimately you're making a movie for an audience and not your friends. Mm-hmm. Although hopefully our friends and the audience are one and the same, but in this case, that was the most distinct change. And, you know, when we did Sleepwalkers, when I finally was directing films, we had to go back to the MPAA 5 times to get an R rating. We had to make cuts in 9 different scenes, and God only knows why. But they wouldn't let me talk to the MPAA. The studio was doing all the in-between stuff, but there were things that you'd seen in every kind of horror movie even at that time. But sometimes the vagaries of choice are baffling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You mentioned John Landis and working with him before. There's a on YouTube, there's like a roundtable discussion with him, David Cronenberg, and John Carpenter. Was that a part of the Fantasy Film Festival show too, or?
It actually was done at the same time,
okay.
But I put that together when I was at Universal as a pilot for a series called Take One that that was the only one that was ever made, and we gave it to stations because all of those films they were talking about were Universal movies. There was Videodrome, American Werewolf, and The Thing all being done at the same time, and so it was my big idea to bring them all together and have them talk about it.
Cool. Yeah, I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that came from the Criterion disc of Videodrome has that on there.
Okay.
And it was something, it ran on, when the USA Network was new, it ran on there a lot.
Yeah. If you could pick one single director, though, that inspired you most to get into filmmaking, who do you think that would be?
Oh, boy. It would be a studio rather than a director. I think it was probably, you know, the Universal horror classics that most made me want to make movies. As I started making little 8mm movies about Dracula and various classic kinds of monsters when I was 12 years old. So that probably would have been the greatest inspiration originally. But now, I mean, most of the people doing Masters of Horror are the people who inspired me even more directly, you know. Toby Hooper with Chainsaw. I mean, George Romero, hopefully we'll get him if there's a third season.
Yeah, that would be great.
Yeah, that's one that I've always, him and Cronenberg, I've always kind of wondered about why they haven't ever been on one.
Well, you know, George's schedule, the biggest problem on Masters of Horror is that it's shot like a TV series. You know, we do one movie every 10 days with the same crew, and when one ends the next day, the next one starts. So plugging in that schedule, once you start filling it up, it's just really, really difficult to get somebody to make a 2-month commitment or so, 6 weeks of their time where you do prep, shoot, cut, deliver, mix, all of that stuff, when they're functioning filmmakers. And George was very busy with his Land of the Dead opening and all of that stuff. For the first season, second season, there were just a bunch of things going on in his life, a lot of travel and everything that didn't allow it. Cronenberg is making a movie in London now, and we've talked to him many times, and we still hope to get him. If there's a third season, there are a lot of people like the two of them, Guillermo del Toro, Eli Roth, Rob Zombie, all of these are people who've said they want to do them if there's any way possible to squeeze it in, Wes Craven as well.
Yeah. So how did the concept for Masters of Horror series come about?
Well, a lot of these guys have been friends for years and years, and the idea of doing this kind of came out of a series of dinners that I had put together. We would always see each other at film festivals or just socially or at conventions around the country, around the world, and always be, well, wouldn't it be great to get together and just have dinner or something? So eventually, after years of that, I realized nobody was going to do it if I didn't, and so I kind of took it in hand and organized, spent about a week trying to get everybody's schedules together to organize a dinner. And we all got together and had a great time, and there have been a half a dozen of them since. And, you know, it's just been a lot of fun socially, but occasionally we would talk about work and about how it would be great to be able to make something without any rules, without any studio interference and all of that. But somehow we managed to make that happen in a way where Showtime licenses it but doesn't produce it, so they don't really give us a bunch of notes or anything. And there's no studio. It's entirely financed by the company that owns Anchor Bay.
Mm-hmm.
And they know horror, and they know a lot of these filmmakers and have released a lot of their films. So it just was kind of a perfect storm of opportunity to do this without any interference, because nobody's getting rich off of this show, at least of all the directors. Opportunity, you know, John Carpenter doesn't ever have to work if he doesn't want to. But he's come in twice and made movies that he really enjoyed making and turned out great. And you know, was totally unused to not having to go to the mall and show it to a bunch of 15-year-olds telling him how he should end the movie. You know?
Yeah,
it's
true. I want to ask you about one of my personal favorite films that you did back in 1990. It was one of the first prequels. There's been many since Psycho 4, the beginning.
You know, I have a very fond spot in my heart for that film.
Yeah.
It was, we shot it in 4 weeks down in Orlando. It was, we were shooting it as they opened the Universal Studios in Florida. And I think they made it as much because Psycho is a tourist attraction as it was a movie.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're shooting these incredibly intense scenes, you know, where Norman and his mother are out by hanging the wash, and she turns on him and it turns into real psychic and physical violence. And 50 feet away behind a police tape are 150 tourists sitting and watching it, you know.
Yeah.
Very memorable. But, yeah, you know, Joe Stefano wrote the script, who had written the original Psycho script. And getting Tony Perkins and our executive producer was the first assistant director to Hitchcock on the original. We used a lot of the original set pieces that had been shipped from Los Angeles to Orlando for it, you know, Mother's Bed and all that. And everyone involved really cared about doing something. Really
I thought Olivia Hussey did a really good job in the film, too.
Wasn't she amazing?
Yeah, she was.
Henry Thomas, that was the first time we'd worked together.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I met with him. He lived in San Antonio at the time. And I see him, and I, Jesus, he's an 18-year-old Norman Bates. and he was great, and we, you know, worked together again in Desperation. And then right after that, we did Chocolate for the first season of Masters of Horror together. And he's a wonderful actor and a really good guy.
Yeah, I want to bring it back around to the Masters of Horror series for a minute.
Sure.
A lot of fans that I've talked to were really angry and confused as to why Showtime pulled the Kashi McKay's episode Imprint.
Well, I don't think anybody would be confused once they saw it.
Yeah, well,
like
once we saw it, we kind of understood, but it is, after all, their argument is it's a pay cable channel, and I don't know.
That's true, and I'm totally with you on that. However, they don't have the right to cut any of the shows. They do have the right to not air any of the shows, and that's always been their contractual right. And in the wake of the incredible, disturbing reveal of Janet Jackson's nipple for 2 minutes, seconds, there's incredible pressure on broadcasters in the U.S. And that's just the sort of thing that Showtime didn't want to happen. I mean, we stretched the envelope pretty far on this series, as you know from watching them.
Mm-hmm.
It goes further than most feature films that are rated R go. And that one it was even tough for me to watch. But the fact is, I don't know, the fans don't really have to complain about when we put it out on DVD completely unedited, exactly the way Miike made it, and we knew we'd be able to do that. You know, you could buy it for $10 or get it at Netflix or rent it, and so it's there. A lot of people were blaming us for it. It's like, no, we were the ones who brought Miike in and said, do what you want.
Mm-hmm.
And so I can't really be pissed at Showtime. We were disappointed, and Miike was particularly disappointed that it didn't air. But it aired in Japan, it aired in Australia, it aired in the UK, and in most of the markets other than the US and Canada.
Yeah, I was kind of curious about, did they not get, like, dailies of it? I mean, at what point did they basically tell him that it wasn't going to air, do you know?
Well, they don't really, I'm not sure that they get dailies, but you never really know what a movie is until it's complete. And we thought that there were things that they would need to take some caution with and told them, but we also said, you know, this is a Miike film. This is the guy who made Audition and Ichi the Killer and Happiness of the Katakuris. And they knew it was potentially intense, and when they saw it, they just felt that it was something that they could not in good conscience air on their network. And so that was a decision that they made.
Yeah, and after I saw it, I actually was less mad about it. I kind of could understand.
You could really see, you know, the American media would probably have a field day, you know, if they...
Oh, you know, they would have come under a lot of shit, and there was a lot of controversy, and, you know, there's good controversy and there's bad controversy, and not as far as I'm concerned. Well, I guess there can be, but when you're a network that relies on FCC standards and things like that, that you have to get a license every year, get it renewed, you know, and in the wake of this political administration that's in power right now, it's never been a worse time.
Yeah. I was curious how it is, because you seem to be much more involved with the writing aspect of horror, even when you direct movies, than any other part of the business. How is it that you got to know Stephen King so well and eventually direct so many of his films and miniseries?
Well, the first thing was on Sleepwalkers, he was sent a couple of things by a couple of directors, me being one of them, and Psycho 4 was the film he was sent. And then there was another film that and he thought, oh, Psycho 4, a movie with a number with it, and the other one seemed more interesting. Then he watched it and I guess had the same reaction you did. Hey, Psycho 4 is much better than it has any reason to
be. Yeah.
And he really enjoyed that. And that was a film that I had not written. And most of the stuff I directed, I have. And so the studio and he decided that I was the right guy. They had hired the other director first and were very unhappy with where he was taking the script. And so they brought me in and dumped the other director, and so I worked with Steve in bringing it back to the vision that he had, and I did a little bit of writing on it, but it really was his script, and he was very happy with the film, and when The Stand came around, he said, well, we're asking Brian De Palma if he wants to do it, but if he turns it down, would you be interested? Well, The Stand. I've been trying to make this for 15 years, my favorite book. Okay. I actually did have pause about it because it was for television and I was trying to get a theatrical feature career going. And it did keep me in television, but at least in a way I could work at the top end of television rather than the bottom end of features.
Right.
And I've had a lot more creative control because of King's involvement in the big TV things that we've done together, The Stand and The Shining and Desperation.
Are you still fairly close with him? And if so, have you talked to him about being a part of the Masters of Horror series?
We've definitely talked about it, and I'd love for him to direct one and or write one or get a story from him. But when we were last talking about it, it was during Nightmares and Dreamscapes, which they had the rights to all of that material first. And there's not much that's available in the King catalog, particularly things that would make good film. And everything that was kind of tied up for that. So I don't know if they're going to do more Nightmares and Dreamscapes or not. I imagine they will. But if that opens up, I would love to get him to do it, because he's a big fan of the Masters series. Mm-hmm. He's been really enthusiastic and supportive of it. So, in fact, we just exchanged emails this morning. after I finished it last weekend for the New York City Horror Festival.
Mm-hmm.
That was a great experience.
Kind of curious about this, too. You were actually responsible for the Shining miniseries. And I know that King himself wasn't really fond of Kubrick's original The Shining.
That's true.
How did you feel about it?
Well, I'll tell you, when it came out, I saw it a few days before it came out, and I had never been so excited to go to a movie. And when I saw it, I was really upset by it. And at the time it came out, the critics were not kind to the film. Now I like the movie a lot as a Kubrick film. But as an adaptation of one of my favorite novels of all time, I felt I'd been cheated upon, you know,
mm-hmm.
Because it wasn't about the guilt that Jack Torrance had for his alcoholism and the guilt he had about feeling violence toward his son that was motivated by his creative impotence. And I think that's what King was disappointed about. It was one of his most personal books. And the things that were most personal to him from the book were not in that movie. And so that was a book that was written while he was drinking. And the screenplay he wrote for the miniseries, he wrote after he'd been sober. So there was a real personal perspective there. And it was an opportunity to go in and investigate that from the inside out. And it was really a great opportunity and one of the best experiences I've ever had in my life as far as the work that I've done.
Yeah, and I believe that he actually said that he enjoyed the miniseries a lot more than he did Kubrick's movie.
Yeah, he was very happy with it.
So you must have really done something right then.
Well, he wrote the script. We had a great cast. Everything fell into place. You know, when the miniseries came out, it got even better received than The Stand, which was incredibly well received.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the ratings weren't as good as The Stand, but it really hit in a lot of places. The Kubrick fans, of course, hate my guts. How dare you tread in those shoes? Well, you know, I was just naive and a filmmaker who saw a great script and an opportunity to do some really good work. And I'm very happy with how it came out.
How do you think the second season of Masters of Horror stacks up against the original season?
Well, I know this is going to sound like bullshit. But I really think, as I'm really proud of the first season. I couldn't be happier with how it came out. But I really feel this season is even better. I think all of the filmmakers realized when the first season was successful and that we were coming back for a second, that they really could flex their creative muscles, even though in a very limited schedule and budget. And they were even more adventurous. I think you'll see, if you haven't seen Toby's show, which is on tomorrow night, I think you'll see a real creative renaissance there, as he did with Dance of the Dead, but this in a very different direction. Landis is really, that's the number two one to go on. Ernest Dickerson came aboard and did great work on a script that I wrote. And I think everybody was not being competitive with one another, but maybe trying to top themselves, you know, to really see what they could do with the form. First, they just saw that they were able to do it, and now they were seeing how far they could go creatively in 10 days and whatever limited budget was available to them. And I'm really, really happy with it.
I'm curious, how personally involved are you in the decision of which directors to bring on to the show?
Pretty involved. It's me and my producing partners. Most of them come from personal relationships, and the schedules have a lot to do with it. You know, Lucky McKee, some people may not have considered a master, but when Romero was not able to fill in his slot, and same happened with Roger Corman, we decided, you know, to be a master of horror is to be someone who's made an influential horror movie, and everyone involved, all of the other filmmakers, you know, thought that May was a movie that showed somebody mm-hmm. with a great command of this genre. So I would say that most of them have been friends of mine or people I was excited about. There have been a couple who have come in through my producing partners or have been pitched very heavily by their representation. Peter Medak was an idea that I loved because his movie, The Changeling, I think, is one of the great ghost movies all time. Just a great, great film, and he's a wonderful filmmaker. And he did a great job with a Bentley Little story called The Washingtonian.
Yeah, there's a couple of directors on here that I noticed that are some of my favorites. Actually, one that I think gets overlooked is Tom Holland.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Who actually did one, I think, of the best 80s horror films in Fright Night. And
absolutely.
It's overlooked.
And Child's Play, yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, Tom's a great guy, and in fact, he acted in The Stand for me.
Oh, really?
Yeah. He started as an actor, then became a writer, and then became a director.
Mm-hmm.
But a really good guy. His episode's based on a John Ferris short story called I Scream, You Scream, We All Scream for Ice Cream.
Mm-hmm.
And David Scow, I don't know if you know him, but he was one of the screenwriters on The Crow, and he's a great novelist and short story writer. Has written a bunch of stuff. He adapted the script, and Tom directed it.
You've also got fairly new out of the genre with Brad Anderson. Although,
yeah,
that's another great film, though, Session 9. And
isn't that fantastic?
Yeah.
And The Machinist?
Yes.
You know, his film Sounds Like is, I think, one of the most unique we've ever done. I think it's a great piece of work. I was a huge fan of his, and I love those two movies. And the whole idea of Masters of Horror is to get filmmakers who have a vision and a style and an approach that's all their own. Their movies reflect a very specific worldview. And Brad was one whose films are so much of a very singular personality that we wanted him to come in and bring us a Brad Anderson film. And he had found this short story by George O'Driscoll. And adapted it himself, and it's very, very haunting and very emotional, and it's very much a quiet horror story. It's a very internal thing, but to me, it's all about when repressed sadness becomes madness, and it's really affecting.
Hmm. I was really hoping that you might be able to tell us something about your own episode, which I think you direct, called Valerie on the Stairs.
Valerie on the Stairs is based on an original treatment that Clive Barker wrote for me and for the series. It's about a young writer who is unpublished and is able to move in rent-free to a home for unpublished writers until they get free room and board until they're published and then they're out on their own. Well, it sounds great to him until he moves in and realizes what a rooming house full of unpublished writers is like. You've got people like Christopher Lloyd as your housemates. It's quite an eccentric collection of people, but even better at first, but soon to become worse, is the sounds that he's hearing in the walls and the crying he hears and the beautiful woman who appears on the stairways late at night when he's trying to work that only he sees, who's asking him to help her. She's quite beautiful and he is quite smitten with her, and then it turns out that she may well be the ghost of someone who died in the Heiberger House, which is the name of the place. But it's very much horrific. I know a lot of real blood and guts horror fans did not love Chocolate. It's a movie I'm very proud of, but, you know, we tried to define horror as broadly as we could with all of the 13 movies. This one is very much more obviously horrific, and it goes very mythological. And Tony Todd plays a beast in it called Ophakai. And he's pretty wonderful.
Yeah, he's pretty much great in everything I've seen him in.
Yeah, a really good guy, too. He had not seen the show until we saw it on the big screen last Saturday in New York, and it was a great experience.
So recently, I saw you accept an award for the first Masters of Horror on the Fangoria Chainsaw Awards.
Oh, Chainsaw Awards, yeah. They cut everybody's acceptance speeches by about two-thirds, I think.
But the one thing that I did, you actually made one of the most honest comments, I think, from anybody that I heard on that show that whole night, and it was the part that I got to hear was you said, we wanted to show that horror is not just about remakes.
Oh, yeah.
And
absolutely.
So just out of that comment, what do you feel about mainstream horror films right now?
I think theatrical horror is in a really bad state. You know, the demise of the independents, really only Lionsgate is doing it, and, you know, they know the genre, they love it, and they really... really know how to sell it. But it's really depressing when it's just numbers 1, 2, 3, or even if it's not officially a remake of a Japanese movie, it tries to be, you know, how many versions of the remake of Texas Chainsaw came out in the wake of that film? And, you know, it's depressing because the people who are making horror movies, and I don't mean the directors and crew, but the studios who are making them, they don't like them. They don't respect them. They don't understand them. They think it's all about just boring teenagers on screen and getting high school kids to come in and, you know, buy shoes with the logos on them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we think that horror can be for grown-ups, too. And that there's a really broad audience and that there's a really broad definition. And, you know, a Brad Anderson film and a Tobe Hooper film and a Joe Dante film and a John Landis film can all exist under the same umbrella and yet be completely different from one another. You know, we did 13 extremely different films in season one, and what I can't believe is now we've done 26 and they're all very different from one another. And that's what we wanted to do. As great as Tales from the Crypt could be, you still knew what you were going to get every week. It was kind of the boobs and blood and wink, wink, wink in the show.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes they were much more serious than that, but usually it was campy. And there's definitely humor in some of them, but some of them, like Brad Anderson's, is a very serious piece. And, it's people making movies they want to make, not people making movies that the marketplace is demanding.
Yeah, and we actually respect that a lot, considering how much we are really opposed to all these remakes that come out recently.
Yeah, I mean, once in a while there's a good one, but still, there are better ideas out there. When a movie's been done, it's been done. I mean, I would do a remake of a film that was not a huge success. You know, that had a great idea, and the idea did not reach a big audience and maybe could go out that way. But to remake something that's already huge and successful. I mean, I'm happy for the Texas Chainsaw stuff because I'm happy to see Tobe Hooper benefiting from it.
Yeah, that may be the only good thing about that. He actually gets some money now.
Exactly.
But, yeah, to remake a remake is
a prequel of it.
You know, I still think one of the best ones is Texas Chainsaw 2. I think that's a masterpiece.
Yeah, the sequel, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Chop Top and everybody.
But you may or may not want to do this, but I have to ask. Do you actually have a favorite Masters of Horror episode from either season?
You know, I really don't. Of course, I'm going to feel close to the ones that I made, but I'm just so excited to have my name on movies by all these people that I'm such a fan of. I feel lucky to be a part of it. I think I like all of them for different reasons. Some, you know, like any audience member, some they're going to be closer to your heart than others. But I'm really happy with all of them for varying reasons. I'm happy that we did Imprint and that it shook up the world a bit. Really happy we did Homecoming. People love or hate, but I'm so glad that it took our little horror show to do this spot-on sledgehammer satire of a horrible administration.
Yeah. Not a lot of movies like that nowadays.
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot of cowardice in the world of entertainment, and they have to be because it's being distributed by giant corporations. You know, Showtime is part of Viacom, which is part of Paramount and CBS and all, and so they have a lot to answer to, but they don't produce the show. They merely license and air it.
Yep. We know that you also have a new novel out right now. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Sure, yeah. Development Hell. It started out as a couple of short stories that were in my first book a few years ago. And the first story, A Life in the Cinema, had been in lots of horror anthologies. But it's basically a Hollywood satire disguised as an extreme erotic horror novel. It's very extreme. I don't even know that some of these stories could get past the Showtime banner, but if they were made into movies. But it's basically about a hotshot young film school director who gets a feature film and Hollywood. And when that doesn't work out, his whole life goes to tatters. And there are revised movie stars and sexual goings-on that go into very dark reaches. There are appearances by real Hollywood people in it, as well as some who were inspired by real people that I'd be sued if I put their names. But it's really a lot of fun. It's satirical, but it goes very, very dark and very, very transgressive. But I think there's a sense of humor about it. And obviously it's from a place, from somebody who's been around the block in those areas. So hopefully there's a ring of truth.
Welcome back, folks. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Mr. Mick Garris. I really enjoyed doing it. We talked to him earlier today.
Yeah, he's a cool guy and one of the few actual honest people about the state of the genre and somebody who's actually involved in something mainstream,
right.
But who doesn't, you know.
And I want to give a big thanks out to Sarah, who actually put the interview together for us. Really professional people. I mean, we've dealt with a lot of people who really don't stay true to their word since we've done this, but, you know, I mean, the exact time we scheduled the interview was the exact time they called.
Mm-hmm.
Very professional. Mick was a really great guy. And
we've dealt with the worst, but that's definitely probably some of the best people.
Yeah. So that's that. One thing I wanted to mention for a lot of you people out there may be interested in seeing some great horror movies that you've never seen. The Chicago Film Critics Association has released a list of their top 100 scariest movies of all time. And you can check all these out online. I'll probably post a link, or someone probably already has on the board. But it's a really awesome list, and I can run down the top 10.
Mm-hmm. I'll bet you I know what number one is, and I haven't even seen that list.
What is it?
The Exorcist.
Wrong, that's number two. Good evening.
That's a, Psycho.
Yeah. You got Psycho at number one, The Exorcist at number two, Halloween at three, Alien, Night of the Living Dead, Jaws, The Shining, which is Stanley Kubrick's version of The Shining, The Texas Chainsaw Massacre, of course, the original, Dawn of the Dead is at number nine.
Shit, that's pretty good for that movie.
Yeah. Rosemary's Baby, it rounds out the list, but they have a ton of stuff on here. Kind of things that you wouldn't think would be on the list, like Suspiria's on there, Evil Dead 2.
Is Night of the Lepus on there? That's about killer rabbits.
I doubt it. Quite really. But, you know, it's a great list. They actually have, you know, Trilogy of Terror. I'm looking through the list. The Stepfather, Friday the 13th.
Yeah, that's an odd one to put on there.
Dead Alive, The Brood. Requiem for a Dream, which really isn't a horror movie, but I guess it is, could be.
It's horrifying.
Scary. Yeah, really good. Jennifer Connelly is, killing that movie. Phantasm, next on the list, too. So they did their homework, folks. You can check out. And I know, just for fun, I'm going to take me a highlighter and see the shit that I haven't seen over the next year or so, so I can check all these movies out. But now we got fan mail to get to them.
That's right. It's the very special section of the show. We read all your fan mail.
We love talking to all the fans.
Suggestions, comments, random thoughts. We read it all. We don't care.
Fans from around the globe.
So I'll just go ahead and get this started off then. First one comes to us from Brother D. He says, I'm jonesing for a good werewolf flick. Can you make any good recommendations? How about anything that I might not have seen? What am I, fucking Miss Cleo over here? I don't know what you have not seen. Something a bit more low budget, independent, what have you. Well,
there's one I was talking about on one of the first shows that I'd seen at that time, and it was really enjoyable, from The Asylum, The Beast of Bray Road.
Then there's The Beast Must Die, which is
that's another cool
also
one.
That's from
an like old early 70s.
That's from the Amicus collection.
Yeah.
You've got Dog Soldiers. Wasn't that the one? That
Neil Marshall did?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people like that movie. I didn't like that much, but a lot of people seem to like it.
Yeah, I don't really like it that much either. Maybe some werewolf fans will enjoy it. I don't know, though.
Here's the thing. They don't make a lot of independent werewolf movies. Mostly independent movies are zombie movies or like lesbian vampire movies.
I don't know. For whatever reason, it seems like there's not a whole lot of werewolf movies coming out nowadays.
Yeah, I can't even think of the last one that I even remember.
You had your Van Helsing, which...
I don't consider that any kind of movie.
Just had a werewolf in it.
Yeah.
So we got a question here from X Invictus X. Have either of you guys seen any of William Girdler's films? If you have, what has been your favorite film of his and why? He was from Louisville, and I just thought it would be awesome if you could do a show dedicated to him and his films. In his short career, he directed 9 films, many of them here in Louisville. But not only that, he was a composer, writer, and producer, most of them horror films. He has looked over a lot, but I think he has some great work, and if you could do a show highlighting his career, that would be swell.
I've never heard of him.
I never have either.
As a matter of fact, if I didn't know him better, I'd say that Invictus guy is probably William Girdler.
It could be. I could look that up.
Yeah, I have no idea. And for us to do a whole show based around somebody, I don't even think we've ever done that before. We've done shows based around themes. We've never done a show based around one person before.
Especially one person we don't know who they are.
Yeah, but we'll look it up. We'll check out, see what kind of movies he's done and stuff. Here's another question. I believe we've answered a question similar to this at least 2 or 3 times. We'll answer it again. It's a really sweet question, too. It says, if you 2 homos were on an island together and you only got to take with you 5 horror DVDs apiece, what would you take and why those films?
Well, you got to take the Dawn of the Dead Ultimate Edition from Anchor Bay because look at all the shit that's on. It's got 3 different versions of the movie, even though...
The other 2 suck.
Well, the Argento cut sucks.
Yeah, it really does. I mentioned that.
You also have... the great documentary, Document of the Dead, which Roy Frumkes did, which hopefully we can talk to him at some point on the show.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure we can.
He also was involved in the classic movie Street Trash. and you also have a new documentary that they made exclusively for that DVD among tons and tons of other extras. So that's a must. You got to have that, especially if you're a George Romero fan. Now... as far as other DVDs go, I'm trying to think of the stuff that I would watch over and over again. And I got to say the new Dark Sky Films version of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre.
Mm-hmm.
That'll be another one because, again, there's like 2 full-length documentaries on it. And then you got commentaries on it. All that creamy goodness. So that's 2.
Well, let's see. Let's think about this for a minute. Stuff that I've watched over. I'd say that for me, actually, the zombie... edition that Shriek Show came out with.
Mm-hmm.
That damn thing's amazing and packed full of good, creamy interviews and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I'd watch that movie over and over again, too. So, see, aside from that...
there's a lot of classic movies out there that deserve Ultimate Editions that don't have them.
Yeah. Here's the thing, too. There's not really DVD releases of some of my favorite films that I watch over and over again, so it'd be kind of hard to do.
Yeah, but that's a few. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if it's 5, whatever. Scaboy mentioned, though, he's talking about he liked the segment that we did where we called up local video stores and asked them about movies. We'll be playing that segment a little bit later. And here's the thing, folks. We do these segments... and I believe when we did the segment back in July, we received no feedback on it at all. I don't think. And that's why we didn't really do it.
Maybe, I think we might have received 1 or 2 emails about it, but.
The thing is, if you like this shit, email us and say, you know, keep doing it. Because we didn't know if people would get it or not.
Yeah, the point of us doing these things, though, really is to test out and see what works and what doesn't. You know, we won't keep doing stuff if nobody ever says anything about
it. So we did another one. And we're going to air it right after we read the fan mail and crap. So if you like it, just at least let us know somehow, you know, so we may keep doing it. We've done other segments from time to time, so
mm-hmm.
That's that.
This next one is from El Juan. Mm-hmm. And it says, after seeing the trailer for the upcoming Day of the Dead remake, this question came to my mind. What is the worst zombie film that you guys have ever seen, and why do you think it was awful? Keep up the good work, guys. I look forward to the show every Friday. The worst zombie film.
That's tough.
Good Lord.
Because there's a ton.
Yeah, that's probably what we watch the most of, actually. Even independent
film. It's sort of a zombie movie, but it's so fucking horrible because they stole the name. I have a VHS copy of The Gates of Hell Part 2.
Mm-hmm.
That is some truly horrendous shit. I don't know how the hell they were able to use the Gates of Hell name, but they did, and they made one of the worst goddamn movies. It didn't have a fucking thing to do with the original film.
All of the sequels to Zombie 2 are fucking awful. Zombie 3, 4, and 5,
mm-hmm.
All those movies are god fucking awful. I can't even like describe how bad those movies are, really. But well, I don't.
A lot of zombie movies, though, that are bad. Yeah. They're enjoyable.
Yeah, but those aren't. Those are just like drag on, waste time. Are they?
Like Hell of Living Dead is not a good movie, but it's enjoyable because it's just basically, you know, the guys watch Dawn of Dead, and they're like, well, okay, let's just copy it.
I'll tell you another one. The Dead Hate the Living.
Yeah.
That's another one I freaking hate, too.
Yeah, I think Dave Parker did that, who actually did the Masters of Horror documentary.
Mm.
Which, yeah, that movie's horrible, and I don't know why. I think it's got a little bit of a following for some reason, but it's bad. One I'll let you borrow, I don't know if you've seen it, if you've watched it yet, Zombie Lake.
No, I haven't watched that one yet.
The zombies in it are painted like a lime green color.
As you got to understand, though, I would say that there's at least a good 50 independent zombie films that I've seen that are just all equally horrible.
That's true. Definitely true. We've got a question here from Pat the Mick. I know there's an original Dawn of the Dead 1978 box set. But will there be one for Night of the Living Dead original or Savini's directorial debut remake? And will there be one for Day of the Dead? Also saw on IMDb that the upcoming Day of the Dead remake has Ving Rhames in it. To me, Rhames was great in the Dawn of the Dead remake. What do you guys think about the idea to remake Day of the Dead?
Well, it was bound to happen, but I've never been really fond of the idea of remaking any of these movies. And from looking at the trailer now, I'm even more opposed to remaking the movie the way it's going. But there is sort of a set, not as many things in it as Dawn of the Dead, but for Day of the Dead, there's like a two-disc set. But for Night of the Living Dead, there's so many different versions of that film that I think was the one that everybody always talks about.
The Elite.
Yeah.
Ultimate Edition or
Millennium Edition.
Millennium Edition, yeah. That's it, yeah.
Which has all the commentaries and stuff on it, the two different commentary tracks from,
I'm sure there eventually will be a Night of the Living Dead box set that might include both movies. Or I'm pretty sure anybody can release Night of the Living Dead on DVD because
anybody has.
Yeah. So possibly we could see at some point maybe Night of the Living Dead 2, but the two versions with Savini's version, and maybe the Night of the Living Dead 3D and put all them in a big box or something.
Yeah, as far as right now goes, though, there's only one version of Savini's, and it's just a bare bones like DVD that I think you can get for about $6 anywhere.
Yeah, I think that is a little odd, though. The movie that started it all was Night of the Living Dead, and there's really not a definitive box set of that out yet.
No, I'm not sure why that is. It's got to have something to do with the rights stuff, though. But, yeah, to remake Day of the Dead the way that they're doing it now, I think that's going to be one of the worst ideas for a remake coming out since The Fog, bro.
It looks really generic, too. I mean, it looks like they're using, just a camera like any independent director would get a hold of or something.
We'll see, though. I've only been wrong one time.
It could just be a really bad edited trailer or something. Who knows?
I swear to God, though.
Hope that's what it is.
As far as remakes go, I've only been proven wrong about the shittiest remakes twice. Dawn of the Dead and The Omen. Those are the only two I can ever remember.
Yeah, that's about the only two that's been that good, actually. Got a question from our good buddy Adam Beck. What's up, CK and Uncle Bill? I'm sure you guys are already aware that George Romero's son, Cameron, just completed his first horror film titled The Screening. I wanted to know if you guys had any information as to when it will be released, or if it will be released theatrically or straight to DVD. Okay. Mike Watt, who is actually a pretty good friend of the show, wrote the script with Cameron Romero. And we talked to Amy Lynn Best about it.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't know if it'll be released theatrically or not. I'm guessing it's going to be a straight-to-DVD release.
Okay, I actually did check on this. And right now the movie's in post-production. It was scheduled for sometime in September to come out, but that's obviously been scrapped. So the guy doesn't know, you know, what time it's going to be released, but it's supposed to have a limited theatrical run. Which means you'll never see it unless you're in Los Angeles.
New York or Los Angeles.
And then it'll go straight to DVD, from what I can find on his MySpace pages.
I also want to know if we'd seen the trailer.
No, but it's on his website if you want to check it out.
To me, it looks like, here he is again. To me, it looks like a brainless version of John Carpenter's Cigarette Burns from Masters of Horror with a lot of gore.
Yep.
Take care, guys. But yeah, I mean, we talked to Emily Best about it, and you go back and listen. We asked, it was like one of the last questions we asked her, because Mike Watt was involved in it.
Yeah, but if you go on his MySpace page, he's got a MySpace page for the movie. It's called The Screening. You can find it on MySpace that way. It says that right now it's in post-production, and he doesn't know when it's going to be released, and then it gives some more details about stuff like that. It's supposed to get a limited theatrical and then straight to DVD, as far as I know.
Right.
Okay, next question. On the boards lately, there has been a battle between Asia Argento and Tiffany Shepis. Which one would you gently plug? Argento's got the rack. Shepis has got the back. BloodTypeOnline.com. Runk Russell.
You got to love that.
Yeah, you got to love that kind of selfless advertising.
Yeah, there's like a poll going on the board.
Which, by the way,
Poor Hottie's number 7.
It's not looking like Tim Shepis is going to win that one.
I don't give a shit.
Well, I'm just saying,
anybody in their right mind.
You're the one that extended the damn thing, so I figured you did give a shit.
I didn't really extend it. I didn't even start it. I think Scabboy or somebody posted something about a lot of people on the board must like manly-looking women.
I swear to God, though, that chick, Asia Argento, looks just like Dario Argento in the face. And then, like, she looks kind of whorish and all, which I'm sure that's the reason a lot of people on the board like her. But she's got that big fucking Quato thing growing out of her back from Total Recall. I don't know. I made a mention that on the board. That's just, how the hell do you get around that?
She's got like that big tumbleweed between her legs, too.
That's right. I don't know. She's got like a dead twin hanging off of her back, though. I don't do know that.
But honestly, anybody out there that believes that Asia Argento is on the same level as Tiffany Shepis, you need your eyes checked.
I have to agree with that, though.
And you need to be smacked right in the face. Yeah. I don't care who wins. Hey, I don't care what you put on the website, whatever. Tiffany Shepis won 6 of them freaking polls. To me, she was up against Danielle Harris, who's hotter than Asia Argento.
Yeah, that's true.
Who else was she up against? I don't even remember.
Carolyn Monroe.
Carolyn Monroe was hotter than Asia Argento back in the day. She's old satchel ass now, but that don't matter.
Satchel ass!
If she wins a poll, that's it. Put somebody else back up there. Like, you can't have somebody, because people on the board are probably just sick of Tiffany Shepis winning. That's the reason she's...
Yeah, they're player hating. Yeah. Now, that's all that's happening.
So that is that.
Mm-hmm.
Rhodes is God.
Mm-hmm.
Asks if we could bring back one director from the dead to make a movie. Who would it be, and what kind of movie would you have them make?
I know what you're thinking.
Fulci.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be right.
Yeah. But just to make things interesting, and just for the fact that we're doing this segment a little bit later, I'll say Hitchcock. Because there needs to be more films based around something besides torture, and he was the master of suspense thrillers. So.
That's right. I was talking to somebody about that, though. Do they even try to make movies scary anymore? I don't think they do.
Fuck no. I had a thread up there that said, you know, list your favorite scary movie moments from the last 10, you know, 15 years. People don't even remember anything being scary, because they don't even try to make scary movies anymore. They try to make movies that gross people out or go for shock.
I mean, what's really bad is, like, they had the, on Bravo last week, they had the 30 even scarier movie moments, and a lot of stuff on there was newer stuff, and I just didn't see where that was scary at all.
Hostel was number one on that list, yeah. But Hostel's not scary.
Yeah, you can like
There's
it.
There's nothing about that movie.
You can like it all you want, but it's not scary. I don't see where you say it's scary. I don't see where you say where Devil's Rejects is scary. It's not.
Mm-hmm.
What else they have on there? Saw?
I'm sure it was on there, yeah.
Yeah, I think Saw was on there. I don't know, though. I mean, it's, those lists are what they are, I guess. You saw who was on there the most. So,
yeah. Celebrating the best of who's there. That's yeah. what I like. So. What kind of movie would you want Fulci to make? I imagine you'd want him to make a zombie film, wouldn't you?
Of course. I wouldn't want him to make a fucking...
Not another like...
Lizard in a woman's skin.
Yeah. Okay, let's see. Here we go. This question is from another one from Ron Russell. Says, have you two legendary radio hosts heard about the Horror Fest coming to select theaters? If you haven't heard of it, check it out at horrorfestonline.com, which you should check that out. But if so, what are some of the movies you're looking forward to? It's coming to select cities on November 17th through 19th, so hopefully you guys go because it will be playing in Kentucky. I think it's a very cool event for the hardcore horror fans.
What's really bizarre is they're actually playing the trailer here in Pikeville.
Yeah, we saw a trailer.
They're not going to have it there, so I just thought that was weird.
We saw a trailer for it at the theater in Pikeville when we saw Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the beginning of the end, and we were really excited about it when we first saw it because I'd never heard anything about it up until that point.
Yeah, I mean.
But yeah, we heard about it back a couple weeks ago. As far as films I'm looking for, I don't know any of those films.
I
think that's the point of having this, isn't it? Is that you're not supposed to know the films because they never had a chance.
I think it's a cool freaking concept.
I actually did know about Penny Dreadful, though, and that was just through the Betsy Palmer
That's a different
stuff
one.
That we
this
did.
This is a different Penny Dreadful.
Oh, is it?
Yeah. There's two Penny Dreadfuls. The one with Betsy Palmer is a short film, and this one is the feature film.
Well, I'll be fucked in the A.
I didn't know that. Because they were both playing at a film fest or something.
Anyway, point being is the two places that I know of that they're showing in Kentucky is one of them's Lexington and one of them's Newport. Now, if I ever forget where the hell Newport is, because I have no idea at this point.
It's northern Kentucky, right across the river from Cincinnati.
Is that where we went when we saw Black Label?
Newport on the Levee is like, yeah, that's a huge theater.
Oh, shit, we got a better chance going to see it in Lexington then, because that's like a 3.5-hour four drive.
Yeah.
Yeah, but here's give you some, you know, insight on where we live. If we wanted to go see us, we'd have to drive about 2.5 hours to the closest.
And we consider that close.
Yeah, that's the closest place we can see. Almost guarantee that we will go and see this because I'm going to make it a point to get out there somehow.
Should be Fire Night 74, which new member on the board.
Yeah, that must be a new one.
Okay, I had a lapse in judgment, looked at the Fangoria site today. Now I know why I don't like it. Their feature is Evil Dead on Broadway.
Mm-hmm.
What the fuck? What's next? Texas Chainsaw Massacre on Broadway? Yeah, I can see Leatherface dancing around stage now. You guys are awesome. I found out I don't need to get serious radio to get a great horror show. Well, that's awesome. You say that.
Yeah, we appreciate it.
Yeah,
as always.
My whole deal with calling Evil Dead silly was what market are they going for there? Who do they expect will go see that shit?
I don't know. The only people that I know of that like their horror mix that much with comedy or British people, and they're not going. They're not going to go to something on Broadway.
I think Adam Beck posted something that he was in New York last week and said that he could, an hour before the show or something, he could have got third row seats. So it's not doing too well, even with all the. I think there's a big ad up on the Horror Channel's website and a big ad up on Fangoria.
Well, you're getting to see what they call overexposure, which means the horror genre is so popular right now that all these little shitty ass ideas people are coming up with, you know, put a musical together. Mm-hmm. Just stuff that doesn't make any sense at all to horror fans. They're going to start doing this over and, you know.
Yeah.
You're going to see a lot more stuff like that, too. I think I recently heard something about a Night of the Living Dead musical. So, you can look forward to that.
I think maybe the Evil Dead failing like it did. Maybe that stuff won't happen now, hopefully.
Okay, here's one from a member from the book called Frankenstein. CK and Uncle Bill, I know you guys are not fans of DVD commentaries, but have you ever heard one that you like?
I'm a fan of some of them. The thing is, when I watch a commentary, I'll watch it if I'm a huge fan of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
Or, I'll listen to it and watch the movie. What are some of your favorites?
The one that sticks out in my mind the most, though, is the one from Devil's Rejects, because that just was a fun one. I mean, it had, you know, it had Bill Moseley and Sherry Moon, Sid Haig on there. And then if you wanted to, you could listen to the one just with Rob Zombie on it. There's also the Night of the Living Dead one that had like the two different commentary tracks on it.
Yeah.
That was a good one. I recently watched the Texas Chainsaw Massacre one because I got the new Dark Sky.
Yeah, the commentary, I've heard the commentary with Gunnar Hansen, Toby Hooper, and Daniel Pearl.
Mm-hmm.
I think maybe that someone else was on there, I'm not sure. That was a damn good one, and I like the Halloween one with John Carpenter and Deborah Hill, which was one of the first commentaries. It was on the Criterion Laserdisc, and they transferred it over. It was on one of the newer DVDs that Anchor Bay released. Phantasm's commentary is pretty good.
Yeah, I actually did listen to that one, too, when we were doing the Scream interview. That one's good, but it's fucking weird because Angus wasn't there to do that commentary. Like, they recorded his someplace else. And you can tell because they try to interject it into the commentary they're doing.
Yeah.
And it'll just be like, they don't mix the audio well. So all of a sudden, Angus will just come in with some observation right in between something Coscarelli's saying, and it doesn't fit.
Usually the thing with commentary tracks is they're either really, really good or they're really bad. And we've got to watch out for that because we're actually recording a commentary track.
Yeah, which is not going to be easy at all.
Yeah.
And especially over a shitty movie like Cabin Fever. But the one that I thought was the worst one that I ever heard, and I recommend that people listen to it just to hear how bad it is, was the Dan O'Bannon one on Return of the Living Dead. Mm-hmm. That's got to be one of the worst freaking commentaries I've ever heard in my life.
That's something from our good friend Horror Bob from the Horror Review. He mentioned that I listened to your podcast on the Dead Pit MySpace page the other day. As I was listening, I became interested on your thoughts about another website that is going to try the whole horror radio gig for themselves. Do you think you've started a trend among the horror websites? And do you think that competition is in store down the road? I did, however, hear you guys say that you encourage people in the horror community to do something different, but to not take from the format that Dead Pit Radio created. I guess pretty much what I'm asking is, if the whole format of an internet horror radio show starts a large trend among other horror websites, what would you guys do as creators of this medium to make your show better and, in a sense, silence any competition?
But we don't try to make the show any better. We just try to make it better each week anyway because we try to get different, varied guests. We try to come up with new segments to do for the show. There's always something new on the website that, you know, we both try to come up with this stuff. And as far as competition goes, I just don't think, even if people steal the format of the show completely, like right down to everything that we do, you know,
some
the way it's set
have.
Up. Yeah. I don't think that it's going to be as good as this show just because of the fact that we are actually fans. You can't make a show like this if you don't know what the hell you're talking about. It just doesn't work. I don't care how good, like, the quality audio is or anything else. It doesn't come across well.
I think the thing, too, like, I think what he's mentioned here is if it catches on really, really rapidly, and like all of the major sites start doing it, like, you know, if Blood Disgusting had a show, or if, of course, Fangoria's already got a show, like Arrow on the Head, if they were to get a show, all that stuff, which it could happen. I mean, that could actually happen. I think the thing about the larger websites is, though, like, they don't want to piss anybody off, whereas we really don't care. I mean, we don't want to purposely piss anybody off. Like, if Eli Roth actually came out with a movie worth a damn, we would actually admit that we liked it. We don't have any personal grudges against anybody. We're just honest. Like, I think a lot of the websites out there, they just, for some reason, they want to get their name on, like, a TV spot for, like, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, the beginning. They want to have, like, a quote. Whereas, like, that would be cool and all if it was us, but I'd want it to be an honest quote. I wouldn't want to say Texas Chainsaw Massacre at the beginning was a great movie and have our quote on there, and then somebody go see it and hate it and say, damn, those Dead Pit guys don't know what the fuck they're talking about. You know what I'm saying?
I just think that you could pump as much money as you wanted to, as you well can see with Fangoria Radio right now, and as much talent as you want to. It just, if you don't have, like, people that actually give a damn about the genre, it just doesn't work. If you don't have a certain chemistry with the person that you're doing it with, it doesn't work either. That's obvious if you've ever listened to that stuff on Fangoria.
But we shouldn't really get into exactly. If you want to go listen to that, you can still do it on MySpace. what we're just responding to this question. I'm sure people wondering. They probably haven't heard the MySpace thing. Basically, what we were saying was something about all these shows popping up lately.
Like I said, though, that's usually what happens with anything. Okay, somebody comes along, they have an idea. They normally originate something, but they don't have all the resources in the world. So some big ass like company or conglomerate or something comes along and takes their idea and puts a bunch of fucking money into it and makes it something huge that actually becomes popular. But with this, the thing is they've kind of tried to do that, but it didn't work.
Yeah. I think they're giving the next Fangoria show away for free.
Yeah.
On the website.
Because you can't, I don't know what it is, but you just can't bullshit people in the horror genre for some reason. Yeah. But like I said, you can put as much money and talent and whatever into it as you want.
I mean, we're just going to keep doing what we do.
Yeah.
And I'm not worrying about anybody else that does it.
Here's the thing you need to understand. For those people, that's a fucking career. Okay? Yeah. That's what those people do, and that's all they do. This is a hobby for us. It's something we do because we like to do it. So it's not going to bother us if 50 million of those sites pop up, really.
Yeah, I think the best thing we can do is just keep doing the show every week and keep having fun with it, because that's basically why we do it.
Yeah, we don't have to answer to anybody. We don't have a bottom line. None of this stuff matters other than the way it matters to us as horror fans, so what the hell?
That's true. I guess, though, while we're on the subject, sort of, we're going to be doing something new on another website. We were actually asked to do a video review segment for a new weekly horror video cast. I don't know what you say for it.
Yeah, that's good enough, I guess.
Video on demand for the Horror Channel. So whenever that starts, we'll let you know. We'll be reviewing probably one disc a week. And it'll be video, so you'll actually see our ugly asses, which I don't know if that's a good thing.
Yeah, there's really a reason we did this on radio. I don't know if people realize it.
But we were asked to do it, and sure, you know, you'll see us be honest on that, too. We're not going to bullshit anybody. That'll never happen unless we actually, you know, get paid a lot of money, which I doubt that'll ever happen.
Yeah.
But,
yeah, we probably could be bought, but people don't have that amount of money to buy us.
That's true. So whenever that starts, we'll let you know. It could start soon. So
this is from Darkstar. He says, I just got the Slither DVD and I have one bitch. That sounds like a good weekend. How come there was no unrated or director's cut for this? If any movie deserved to have one, this is it. Also, I for hope that this movie gets a second chance on DVD the same way that Day of the Dead did on VHS. This year, Slither was one of maybe three movies that were worth a shit, and it would be a damn shame if it disappeared for a second time. But to answer your question, I went on James Gunn's website and pulled this off somebody actually asking this question, and the question they asked him was, will there be a special edition DVD of Slither? And his answer was, listen carefully, the DVD edition of Slither being released on Tuesday is the only edition being planned. We're not going to pull a sneaky move and release an unrated cut or a special edition in a few months. Initially, some of the marketing people wanted me to make up an unrated director's cut, but I felt dishonest doing so. The R-rated version is my director's cut, and the MPAA okayed it the first time through. If there's ever a special edition with more supplemental material, it won't be for years. So I hope that's at least I'll let you breathe a bit easier regarding your Slither DVD purchase this week. So there you go!
I still haven't got that. We didn't get it to review. We're not going to be able to review it on the show.
That's horrible. It's a great movie.
I really like the movie.
Yeah. We probably will watch it, though.
Last question here from Indy, from Indy Phantom. Thought I'd drop you a quick line. Fucking your show this week was great. I laughed my ass off at some of the stuff you guys said, especially when you called Evil Dead musical silly, which it is. Totally agree with the review of The Woods. The film's minor flaws are nothing compared to the great overall feel of the piece. Don't regret blind buying that sucker one bit. He's asking us.
Agnes Brett Bennett.
Yeah, she's hot too. Have you guys seen the film Feet? I don't recall if you ever reviewed that one. We haven't seen it. I have heard about it.
Is that Brett Leonard?
Yeah.
I've heard about it too. I've never seen it.
He also wanted to mention that he saw Night of the Creeps on Scream last night, which is, I think Scream is a Canadian horror channel. Fucking Tom Atkins' best work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is, really.
I'm assuming you guys have probably tried to snag an interview with this guy. That is
amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We just did that this week, and you know, it didn't work.
What a surprise. Here's the thing, folks. If you don't know already, if any of you all out there have ever had to deal with anybody that has work in California, you know about talent agencies, and you realize that the odds of getting someone through a talent agency by using the phone or by writing an email are about, I'd say, 5%.
And that's the only way we know to get in contact with Tom Atkins.
Yeah. So, unless Tom Atkins is listening, I don't know.
Are you listening, Tom? So, we'll be back and talk a little bit about what we're going to have on the show next week.
And then we're going to do some movie reviews.
And some movie reviews.
Which will be lovely, since we've got about 10 of them.
Yeah. And a special outro song this week that fits the theme perfectly.
That's right.
Right after the newest edition of Dial H.
The Horror.
Good evening. I'm Alfred Hitchcock. On this week's edition of Dial H for Horror, we have some special prestigious celebrity guests who will be calling some of the most well-refined movie and rental institutions in our great country. I ask you to join us this week again as we dial H for Horror.
Calling Movie Stars Video. This is Crystal.
How may I help you? Hello there. I'd like to ask about a couple of titles, if you guys might have them in.
Can you hold on for just a little minute, please?
Okay. Ellie! Ellie, sit down over there.
Is that what were you looking for?
Oh, yeah. Snakes on a Train is the
Snakes
one.
Snakes on a Plane?
What was that?
Huh?
Pardon? Snakes on a Train?
That's not out yet.
Oh, okay. There was a few older ones we had. Dream Reaper was one that my granddaughter wanted to see. You got Dream Reaper.
Dream? Dreamer?
Dream Reaper.
Oh, Dream Reaper.
Yeah.
I don't see it.
Oh, you don't?
Nope.
Pet Sematary?
We do have that one.
Okay. Do you guys have The Gate Part 2?
No, we sold that one.
Okay. Now, are you guys still down close to Henderson Road?
We're right across from Dairy Queen.
Oh, Dairy Queen. I've been down that road. Okay. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Uh-huh.
Bye.
Bye.
Entertainment Video.
Yes, how are you doing today?
All right.
I was going to inquire about some of your horror movies. I was going to have a horror fest here soon.
Oh, okay.
My granddaughter, Cal, wanted me to ask about some of these movies.
All right.
I was curious if you had a movie that's by the name Don't Go in the Woods.
Don't go.
Alone.
No, ma'am.
Okay, then. Also, she was looking for a movie called Sasquatch Mountain.
What's the name of it again?
It was called Sasquatch Mountain. I believe it was on Sci-Fi.
I got a Sasquatch Mountain.
I don't believe that's it.
Nope, I don't have to believe it.
All right, then. There was a couple more, if that's okay.
Yeah, that's fine.
There was one called Cheerleader Camp.
Nope, I don't have that one either.
Yeah, okay. What time are you all close this afternoon or evening?
10 o'clock.
Okay. Well, I don't know where I get. Would you let me in?
Put you in?
Yeah, if I got there a little bit late.
I usually leave right at 10.
All right, then. Well, thank you very much.
If you can think of any other movies you can call, and I'll get them and hold them for you, though.
Oh, that's all she really had down, though, but I thank you.
Movie galleries, Kim.
Hey, babe, I was going to ask you about a couple of horror movies, if you guys got them in stock.
Okay, what is it?
The Hitcher 2, I've been waiting.
What now?
The Hitcher 2, I've been waiting.
No, honey, we haven't got that.
Okay. What about Toby Hooper, the Mortuary? Mortuary is the name of it.
Mortuary?
Yeah.
Let me check on it for
you. Okay, thank you.
see. We're actually showing. Yeah, we've got one.
Okay, you got it on DVD?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Excited for you?
No, I got a couple more I want to ask about.
Oh, okay.
You guys got Leatherface, the Texas Chainsaw Massacre 3.
Let's see here. Let me see here.
Okay.
We've got some. We've got Texas Massacre, Chainsaw Massacre, Next Generation. And we've got the Texas Chainsaw Massacre on DVD.
Okay, you got all, okay, they're all on DVD.
No. We got the Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I think it says 2 here, on DVD. And then we've got just the Texas Chainsaw Massacre Next Generation is on VHS.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Last one I got is Chud to Bud the Chud.
What now?
Chud to Bud the Chud.
No. No.
I don't know. I don't even know if that's out on DVD.
Okay, no, I know we don't have that one.
Well, okay, baby, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Bye-bye.
Welcome back to DeadPit.com. I'm Uncle Bill.
I'm the creepy Kentuckian, buddy.
I hope everybody enjoyed the second episode of Dial H for Horror.
With our special guest, Judd.
From Pet Cemetery. You didn't know that.
You have Reverend Kane.
Yeah. And then Dusty.
Dusty Rose, baby.
Son of a plumber.
Okay. Yeah. He's asking about DVDs.
Maybe butt what? Yeah. Nobody will get that, but us.
Anyway, what should we talk about our guest next week? Because he is a very strange person, Uncle Bill.
Yeah, he's incredibly strange and a hack, from what I understand. It's Kevin Strange from HackMovies.com.
Now, here's a classic example of just a creative person doing something with nothing. I mean, you'll learn next week, he uses a camcorder to make his movies. And he makes Dream Reaper, the one we've seen, was one of the most entertaining movies, especially horror comedies, that I've seen this year.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of you people who haven't seen the movie, you really should anyway, but if you're a fan of, like, horror comedy films, like low-budget picture stuff, and trauma stuff, actually, you'll like this movie for sure.
Yeah.
It's Dream Reaper.
And we talk about that next week. And it's just great to have him on because I was a big fan of Dream Reaper. And I know we reviewed it a few weeks back.
Mm-hmm.
And I highly recommend it to everybody to go check it out. And he's going to be the guest next week on Deadbeat.
Deadbeat.
But also, this Tuesday is Halloween night, folks.
Nuh-uh.
It is.
Okay. Well, I'm going to get some liquor and I'll be back.
You know what we're doing now?
Eating chicken.
But also, do commentary for Cabin Fever.
Which I don't know whether I'm looking forward to that or dreading it. Because that's either going to be one of the funniest things we've ever done or a complete utter disaster. I'll just say that.
Yeah. And I'm going to tell people now, this is a limited time thing. This is the big-ass Halloween bash 2006, the first ever. This is going to be up on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And after that, it's gone, folks. You will never hear it again. And that's probably a good thing.
Yeah. It may or may not.
It probably won't be that good. We haven't recorded it yet. So, we got that for you on Halloween night. We're giving too much horror goodness away. I just can't. But I think we can give something else away.
Mm-hmm.
How about give away our copy of Halloween 25 Years of Terror?
We can't do that. That's silly.
I want to give it away, though.
No, we can't do that. That costs too much money to get that. Give it away like that, that's fucking retarded.
I want to, though.
Well, all right, if you want to, then we'll give it away.
Okay, here's the deal. Not a lot of you people out there dress up for Halloween. You go to Halloween parties, or maybe you just want to scare all the little trick-or-treaters when you open the door. Mm-hmm. So take a picture of your Halloween costume and email it to us, deadpit@deadpit.com. And Uncle Bill and myself will judge. And the best costume or most original costume, or maybe if you dress like a slut and you look really hot, which...
And this does not include the male population of our side.
I'm not talking about male sluts. You may win the DVD copy of 25 years of terror Halloween. So
it makes a lovely Halloween gift.
We'll be doing that. If you send it to us at deadpit@deadpit.com, we will pick a winner by next week and give that son of a bitch away. So that is that. What else we got? We got anything else to talk about before we get to the DVD ruse?
Uncle Bill.
No.
Okay.
In a world.
In a world filled with shit.
That would be this.
Okay. First up is a movie that we've both been looking forward to because it's extreme. Fucking A! This one is the newest film from Chris Seaver of Low Budget Pictures. This one is The House on Bone Jack Hill, if you will.
I don't know what it is about these fucking movies, but like that and Destruction Kings, anything I've ever seen by the guy, actually. He uses like the same cast of characters.
Right. Except the extreme guy. I don't remember him unless he had a ton of makeup on Destruction Kings.
I remember him from Destruction Kings, but everybody else I remember. But it's just the funniest shit, the way that they come up with all these cross references to other, you know, genres of film.
And it's
stuff.
Really nonstop comedy.
Yeah.
I mean, the script it's works.
It nonstop laughs. It's like fucking must-see TV on
it
NBC
is,
or something.
It is, seriously. It's basically a spoof on the House on Haunted Hill movie.
Yeah, it is.
Well, movie, I guess. There's going to soon be movies. You have a group of classmates. One of them has an uncle that died that left in the home, right?
So it's a grandfather or uncle, I don't know. Yeah. It doesn't matter. Somebody died and left him the home.
So they all go there for the weekend to enjoy themselves, and it makes fun of everything that was in House on Haunted Hill.
Okay, let me give you a brief rundown of the shit that it makes fun of, though. You got one character in it that's like the extreme guy, like you were doing, who everything he does, he wants it to be extreme, and he's always like...
And there's awesome dialogue about extreme butt sex.
Yeah. Then
getting, like, semen in swirls and turds and shit. It was just...
Yeah.
It was really, like, extremely juvenile, and I just loved it.
You gotta love that. And then you got the guy, my favorite character in the film, who is, like, the D&D metal guy.
Yeah.
Who always makes...
story guy.
Who always makes cross references to, like, you know, going on journeys and stuff, and Dio.
When he came riding in on, like, this unicorn, it's supposed to be a unicorn, and they played the Neverending Story theme, I seriously, no joke, fell out of my seat and fucking fell on the floor, and I just couldn't believe it, because you know for a fact, okay, I hope to God that they don't get sued for that, because it was just perfect, you know, the way, he just comes trotting along, and they called him, the name of the character is Sebastian, but they called him Bastion in the scene. So,
it was great. And then you got the crazy bitch that's supposed to be from I guess it's the Ring movies.
Yeah.
Who's the ghost, that always just, like, disappears and stuff. Here's basically what the whole point of the movie is. It's just a bunch of, an excuse for a bunch of these people to get together and have in-jokes about other horror films and just other films in general. So, and it's almost the same kind of humor that was in Destruction Kings.
Yeah. And it's more of the same, you know, low-budget picture goodness. If you guys haven't checked it out, I highly recommend it. I know this one's coming out next year through Chimpy Video.
I don't know what it is, but I love movies like this. I can never get enough of these movies. You know, if the guy makes anything like this, I'm probably going to like it.
Yeah. Lowbudgetpictures.com. You can buy Destruction Kings there, whatever, you know, all the other stuff. I know they have tons of the Mulva movies. It's supposed to be really popular. David Rashawn was in one of them. So that's that. Highly recommend The House on Bone Jack Hill. In a world.
Yeah, me too. Let's go ahead and get this over with. Next movie we're going to talk about is a genuine fucking piece of trash.
A genuine turd.
And I don't say that a lot about movies. There's been very few movies where I just come right out and say it's a piece of shit. But we both agree wholeheartedly. This is called Left in Darkness. And it's directed by a guy by the name of Stephen Monroe, and we got it through Anchor Bay. And the only good thing I can say about this DVD is the cover fucking glows in the dark.
It does. It glows in the dark, and it's really neat. See that?
So you want to try to explain the plot for this, or you want me to?
Actually, the plot, it could be good. I mean, if it was done right, because nobody has done anything like it.
Okay, so let me give this a try. Basically, she goes to a party, and they dose her up with some kind of date rape drug, like this group of fraternity boys does. She dies, you know, from overdosing on it. And she's trapped in this house with this guy who at one time or another was like her guardian angel when she was a kid, right? So there's all these soul-sucker demons that are around the house that are trying to, if they can catch up with her, and as long as she stays in the light, she'll be all right. But if she goes into darkness, they can catch her, and they can suck out her soul, and she'll go to hell. Well, it turns out that the guy that she thought was her guardian really works for Satan or some bullshit like that. And I know it's giving away the movie, but who cares? You shouldn't watch the movie anyway. So
yeah, well, you couldn't really review it without giving it away.
Yeah, so basically, the last 30 minutes of the movie is her battling like the guardian angel guy and trying to get her grandfather back from the other side, where he's stuck in like some sort of limbo, where he's almost a demon and he's almost in heaven. The point why we hate this movie so much is it is fucking pointless. Like, it's just a bunch of running around from different rooms with just, you know, these fake lame looking demons chasing her and stuff.
Confusing too.
And it just doesn't. Yeah, it doesn't go anywhere. It doesn't have any kind of resolution and. It's a waste of time.
It really is.
I liken this movie to kind of what it would be like to sit through an hour and a half long episode of like Buffy the Vampire Slayer with no fucking semblance of action or a plot or anything you could follow.
Yeah, it's just poorly written, I guess you could say. I don't know. I didn't like it. That was probably the most boring film that we watched this week. Yeah,
and that's saying a lot because we watched a couple more boring films.
Yeah, that's true. So that's Left in Darkness. Anchor Bay recently released it.
I can't, in good faith, recommend this movie.
Yeah, but if you still want to give it a shot, they have at you can stroll on down to your local Walmart.
Yeah, they actually have it at Walmart, believe it or not.
Yeah. So that is that. What else we got?
Well, I guess we could go ahead and talk about this little masterpiece here. This movie's called Jigsaw. It comes to us from a couple guys by the names of Don Adams and Harry James Picardi, who are the writers, producers, and directors on the film. A professor and a group of college kids get together. Mm-hmm. They all go out to a bar and they decide to play a game where they all try to come up with different parts of, I think it's their own personality that they want to put into this kind of like a metaphorical figure for their own personalities. So they build it up, and they take different parts, and one of them is like a camera for one guy, and one of them's a saw, and there's other like, they put limbs on it and stuff. It's all supposed to be based on something that has something to do with them. And supposedly, once they put it all together, it'll come to life. But nobody really believes any of that shit. So they all go to the bar, and they're sitting around having drinks and stuff, and this thing that it eventually does come to life, and it it's fucking hilarious because it's basically like the cover of the film would have you believe that the guy playing the jigsaw thing is an actual man, but it's in the film it's like a paper mache cutout face and head, and with some kind of weird little bone.
I think certain shots is a man, but
yeah, it's walking like when you see him walking around and stuff, but the close-ups and stuff. That's just some kind of mask that they made.
What they were attempting here, though, was just, it's another one that's along lines like Fred Olin Ray, just the B-movie stuff. Like, I think Charles Band was part of it.
He's the executive producer. Yeah.
So I know what they were trying to do, and halfway through it worked, until you see the actual jigsaw kill, then it's like, it just looks ridiculous.
Yeah, for one thing, it's not at all scary.
No, I don't think it tried to be.
Yeah, but for another thing, it's not at all hokey either. So if it wasn't trying to be scary and it wasn't trying to be hokey, I don't know what in the hell in between it was trying to be. But whatever it was,
I thought it was a little bit unintentionally hokey. Like, why the hell would a teacher take his class to a bar to get drunk?
That's a good point. But then again, why in the hell would they all build up a jigsaw thing with like a real working saw and shit on it?
You got to suspend belief.
Yeah. Needless to say, though, that if you wanted this film to work, a good thing to do would have been to have the kills and the death scenes in the movie be unique, and they're really not. There's no real gore in it either.
Yeah. Well, all these independent movies, they really probably don't have the budget for gore, you know, as much as... And this movie didn't look like it had a huge budget.
No, not by any means.
I thought the first half of it worked, but whenever you saw Jigsaw, it just, I don't know, it just didn't work.
Yeah,
I thought it was cool, though, because they do have a couple of really hot women in it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We always enjoy especially seeing that. I mean, come on.
It is kind of that return to 80s B-movies, I think.
I mean, it was enjoyable to watch. It was entertaining. But it was one of those movies that, like, you see it, and by tomorrow night, you'll pretty much forget about most of it. And we have, you know.
Yeah, there's nothing about the movie at all that stands out. And I probably wouldn't recommend it either, if I was being completely honest. Because... there's not really any point. You've seen movies like this before if you watch any kind of B-movies. So.
Might be a cool movie to rent if you see it somewhere. I mean, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, if you're really into B-movies, rent it. That'd be the thing.
Comes with a double feature. It comes with Totem in the double feature from Full Moon Entertainment, which didn't give us the movie. We got to mention that Don Adams, the co-director of this film, sent it to us, and thank him for that. So let's go on. That was Jigsaw.
Okay, so I guess we got to talk about this. We got to talk about the Gooligans. This is not an official DVD that I know of, nor is I don't even know if you can get this anywhere. But
you can go to thegooligans.com and check it out.
This is kind of like. These guys sent us a DVD full of a bunch of different clips, I think, from their website, which is this small series called The Gooligans, which I think is more based on the Munsters than anything else.
Definitely.
But it's like retro horror comedy, like Abbott and Costello stuff.
Black and white. Looks like it's from the early 60s, late 50s, early 60s.
Mm-hmm. And you got your main characters in it are a zombie, a wolfman, a vampire, and Frankenstein.
Right.
If I remember correctly.
And, you know, some of the episodes are pretty bad. And there's a couple of really enjoyable things in it.
Yeah, this is really like hit and miss.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of these episodes are.
I think it's got potential to be really good. I mean, if they I don't know what type of budget they have for this stuff, but it does have the potential to be something really cool, I think.
But what it does is it kind of follows along in the lives of either one of those characters, like the zombie, the wolfman, the vampire, whatever, as they go through like a daily ritual thing, kind of like what the Munsters used to be. We'd go like one day in the life of something weird that happens or messes up in their life. Like there's one where Frankenstein's trying to fix a car and it like beats him up. And there's one where they go to the beach.
There's another one that was the most hilarious one. And they're actually featured on the cover. It's when Frankenstein learns to dance. And he goes into this dance with a couple of like go-go dancers, it looks like. And, you know, he's dancing real stiff and twisting around. And he twists around and knocks one of their heads off. And that just looked so fucking hilarious when he did it, because I didn't expect it at all.
Plus,
it is truly
the noise.
That loud scene.
The noise that it made, too, was like a sound of a balloon bomb.
As I was watching it, I was thinking it was pretty silly and, like, you know, just...
Yeah, I was, too.
But more than I think about it, like, it really does have a lot of potential.
This damn thing right here, though, I was thinking about this, too. There's no reason that this shouldn't have a cult following of some kind. Because I know there's people out there that like stuff like this and like it. And another thing, too, was it has... music in it that's like surf music, I guess it would be called. And there is a market for this. It's, you know, we're probably not the best people to...
Yeah, that's being honest, too. Yeah. I mean, you know, we're not huge Munsters fans.
But I can guarantee that this would have a lot of fans if it got out there on like a really broad way.
Yeah. TheGooligans.com, if you want to go check it out. I think a lot of the clips are up on the site. And the guys do a good job at, you know, putting together the show. The Slack Pack is who it's written, produced, and directed by. So check it out. I'll recommend you to at least go to the website and give it a look.
Yeah, I definitely recommend that as well.
So what we have next is from our good friend Eric Kent, who sent this to us, of Axlish Productions. You can go to myspace.com/Axlish. Go and check this out. This is Season of the Dead.
Okay, so you start off, and I think you start off with two guys are in like a shed. or some kind of little building, something. And they're trapped by all these, this horde of zombies.
One of them was already bit by a zombie.
Yeah,
right?
One of them was already bit, and they knew he was going to die. So they kind of like bum rush their way out of there. And the guy makes it to another, the inner city, to a house. And along the way, you know, he's fighting the, trying to get, stay away from the zombies and fighting the zombies and stuff. When he makes it to the house, he finds out that there's a guy there that says that he'll give him, you know, a place to stay, and they'll try to figure out some way to get out of there. And come to find out that the guy is actually harboring a zombie that was, is it his son?
Yeah, and he had him like chained up in,
yeah,
a closet.
In a closet, yeah. And he basically finds out that it was a trap that the guy had set to get him to come there, and he's going to be end up being food for the zombie.
Yummy.
And so the next part of your film, you got, you know, the big fight between the two, and you know, what happens after that.
Yeah, I should have probably talked to him a little bit about, you know, the actual budget of the movie, but I can tell you that it was shot really well, whatever he used. And it's a short film. It's 27 minutes. I think the music, and it had like a Romero sort of pacing to it. I'd say that. The thing about it like is, though, like, it was a little bit hard to follow. You didn't know what was going on a lot of the time. And,
well, given that the fact that
I would have had more gore in it, too.
Yeah, there's have more gore there's not really any gore movie.
Because, you know, I'm sure
any gore in this movie.
He probably didn't have the budget to do that, but you got to have gore. Here's Zombie like, movies, now shit.
It's really short. You know, like you said, it's a short film, too. And I don't know. It just seems like the ending is rushed a little bit. I don't know if you remember the end, but it just seemed like the ending was kind of like something that was just put together really, really quickly or something. And as for the zombies and stuff, it was basically just white face paint or
long
something.
Long lines like Donald Dead.
Yeah, but it didn't even get like the neck or anything, just right on the face.
Well, this is low budget guerrilla style filmmaking.
Yeah, but I guess that's not really the point of the film, but I think you need more time with films like this. If you're going, as a short film, it just didn't work. If you had an hour, even, you could come up with like, you know, some kind of atmosphere and pacing and
another one too, like, you probably need more characters, like, because Eric Kent, Axelish, is basically the guy that's in the movie more than anybody. I mean, he's basic star of the movie. You have the guy that goes in the guy's house. You have that guy. Then you have his friend that died early on, and that's it. You
know? Yeah.
Nobody else. It helped to have at least, you know, a woman or something, you know, along the line, Lori Cardell sort of character.
But then something again, like I don't think this is meant to be a fucking masterpiece of modern art or anything.
No, it was just, you know, it was, he actually did get picked up, though, from few film festivals, the Fright Night Film Festival, official selection from that, the Freak Show Film Festival, and last weekend it came from Lake Michigan. So, but if you want to check out more stuff about Axelish Productions, you can go to myspace.com/Axelish. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and I would recommend that you do.
Yeah, go check it out, because, you know, he's having fun making these movies.
So what we got up next?
This is the never-ending story right here.
Yeah, I remember. I'd forgotten why we don't do this many films, but now I remember.
Yeah, this is just the Halloween special, though. We're going back to 4 next week.
Okay. So the next film we got is one that actually does have a cult following, and a lot of people on the internet seem to like the film, from what I can gather. This is called Dust Devil, and it was just released by Subversives by a guy by the name of Richard Stanley that directed it.
Good guy, Richard. Yeah.
So here's what you got. A town in South Africa, okay, and there's a guy that walks around, and I'm still trying to figure out what the hell he is doing. I know that he's a serial killer, okay, and he walks from town to town, and he's practicing some kind of ancient voodoo, because that's in the film a lot, too. And what he has the ability to do is basically kind of like do the Jedi mind trick on women, apparently, and try to convince them that, you know, he's a nice guy, and they end up stopping and giving him a ride. And when they give him a ride, he invariably ends up hacking them to pieces.
Yeah.
And for some reason in the film, he fucking collects their fingers. And there's an explanation for this, and I swear to God the explanation is something like, there's a lot of power in the knuckles And I was thinking to myself, really? Is that all you got? Yeah. But that's all the explanation was. So, and okay, there's a guy, there's another guy too, and if anybody remembers the film Gross Anatomy, you'll remember that he played one of the doctors in that film. He's like a, he was also in Serpent in the Rainbow too. He's the Haitian looking guy. Mm-hmm. Who's the, he's, he plays a,
police,
he plays a sergeant or something in this film. Who's on the trail of the Dust Devil, which is what this guy is called. And he also has these really weird dreams every night that he's being followed by the Dust Devil. And, you know, he's got this backstory where his wife died. And he's got a lot of guilt about that. And so he's following after trying to catch the Dust Devil. And then you got another woman. I don't remember her name, but she was in the Masters of the Universe movie. Who
gets naked in this movie.
Yeah, she does.
It's really good.
Who's running away from her husband, and as she's running, she runs into the Dust Devil.
That's right.
And picks him up. And then there's a big battle that ensues over that, and I can't tell you what happens there, but that's the end of the movie. But let me just say, with no degree of difficulty in saying this, this is a shitty movie!
Okay. Let's talk about the positives first.
Let's not. This is shitty! I got an idea. Let's talk about the negatives. This movie's got some shitty plot, some shitty acting in it. It's got a bunch of dickheads you don't give a fuck about, and a fucking horrible ending, so fuck you!
Oh, God, Mike Watt's not listening. Alright, it is shot in South Africa. And the guy that directed it, Richard Stanley, you also have...
It's a dumbass!
You also have, like, three of his other documentary movies. And, you know, evidently the guy, you know, is a big documentary filmmaker and only directed one big movie, which is Dust Devil. And it is a cult movie, and I really don't know why, other than, like, it's got some really cool, like, visual shots in it from, like, the locations in South Africa and stuff. But it's another one, it's hard to follow. You don't know what the hell's going on most of the time.
Here's the thing. If they would have just stuck with the one story about the Dust Devil and how he picks up these women and stuff like that, and not gone into the whole like voodoo background shit that they did with the, you know, police officer and stuff, and all that needless stuff about, you know, all the other police officers and that he's got to battle with in order to try to find out what's really going on. If they would have just stuck with the one story, it probably would have been okay. But they went into all that backstory, and that just bogs the film down to where you can't really watch it.
Yeah, but for some reason, there's a lot of people like it.
I can actually understand that, though, because it does have that tone, and it's kind of got a mystique to it, I guess.
Yeah.
But
it is well shot. I mean,
But honestly, though, there's not enough in this film to make me think it would be a cult film. I could never, like, sit around and watch it over and over again, which is what...
Yeah, I guess the best way we'd say it is there's not enough meat on the burger.
That's right.
So this one, okay. It's a 5-disc set. Has Dust Devil, the final cut. Also has the work print, which
you couldn't get enough of the shittiness of it to begin with.
Yeah, which is like 7 minutes long.
Oh!
You also have the soundtrack, which is actually really good. I thought the soundtrack of the movie.
I don't even remember.
I did like it.
I was in a coma halfway through the movie.
And you have documentaries. That he did Secret Glory, Voice of the Moon, and The White Darkness.
Here's what I will say about this set, though. It's really limited. I think there's like 9,999 that were ever made.
Right.
The set itself is amazing because it has a bunch of documentaries and stuff in it, like you said, too. I would buy it just for the damn other stuff, not just the movie, because I think the movie's kind of like the secondary thing. To me about it anyway.
Yeah, it does actually have some interesting documentaries in it. We haven't watched them yet.
I watched a couple of them.
Oh, did you?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
That's what I'm saying. The actual documentaries in the film are a lot better than what I thought Dust Devil was. But then again, I'm a sucker for any kind of documentaries that deal with genocide and stuff like that.
You're a fantasy, you killers.
Yeah, I am, I have to admit.
Okay. Next one is a really short movie. This one's only about 10 minutes long. And comes to us from our good friends Dean Bertram and Lisa Mitchell from the great country of Australia, home to the late great Crocodile Hunter.
God rest his soul.
And a shame on them some bitches in South Park make fun of him.
That was horrible.
That was. That episode was killer.
Funny, but,
that was,
but horrible.
Yeah. This one is Foresta Rosa. Hey, the thing about this movie is, and we gotta tell everyone that it really is a completely visual movie. There are no spoken words. It's basically Lisa Mitchell, who stars in the movie too, is wandering the forests.
Mm-hmm.
And as they chop down trees in the area, right?
Well, there's, you know, there's a, somewhere else. There's a like a lumberjack,
yeah.
I think, that's chopping on a tree.
Right.
And as he's chopping on the tree, she starts to feel a pain in what appears to be her crotch. But I couldn't tell if it was her stomach or her crotch, but she starts to get a pain there somewhere. And I'm guessing that somehow or another, in this kind of surreal fantasy world that they're in, the chopping on the tree is some kind of metaphor for something, and she's beginning to feel the pain. I'm sure it's some kind of nature analogy that I'm not getting. So she starts to, as he chops the tree down, she starts to bleed. And apparently bleed from her ass as well, because that's another scene in the movie.
Yeah, that is a sickening scene.
Uh-huh.
To be honest with you, I couldn't follow the movie. I didn't know what was going on. Us Kentucky folk really aren't that brilliant.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you have to give us just a straight story, usually, before we can get it. You know, we usually don't get these the movies like, you know, I'm sure that... Goldberg's movie, All I Want for Christmas, had a message to it. I couldn't get it from his either.
I know there was a Santa Claus that jerked off a lot in that movie.
Yeah.
I do know that. Here's the thing, though. The movie itself is only about 9 minutes long. And as I've said in the past, I can't tell anything about a movie that short. I don't give a shit. Who makes the film? I cannot tell anything about movies under like 20, 25, 30 minutes, something like that.
Yeah.
It has to at least have time to have some kind of... This was basically what it boiled down to, was like a scene from a movie.
Right.
Okay, and I don't know, since there was no dialogue and no other way to tell anything.
It's almost like you didn't see the first hour of a movie, then you turn it on and that's on.
It was great for that, though, if it was a scene from a movie, but it's in no context with anything else. So I don't know what to base it on.
The tagline is, at the heart of every fairy tale lives a darker shade of terror. And to be fair, actually, the movie... did look sort of like a fairy tale. Sort
it
of
did. They did a good job with costumes and all that and the camera work and stuff. So you got to give them that credit.
Yeah. More info, though, if you want to check out the movie or email Dean, who directed the film, go to lovecraft21c.com.
Okay. Okay.
Now, the final film.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I believe it's the final movie. Yeah. I hope to God it is.
As far as I know, yeah, it is.
This one comes to us from Tartan Asia Extreme, which is one of the greatest companies going. Now,
it's one of the greatest companies ever.
I'll say that to anybody. Park Chan-wook's final chapter of his Vengeance trilogy. You know, he did...
Lady Vengeance! Vengeance!
Yeah. You know, before he did Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance, then Old Boy, which everybody loves. Everybody talks about that one. This one is the final one, Lady Vengeance, a.k.a. Sympathy for Lady Vengeance.
Okay, so what you got here is you got Lady Vengeance in the film.
Goom Jolly.
Yeah, is the a woman who was sent to prison basically because she was blackmailed into convicting herself into like a child murder, which she didn't commit. But you find that out early on in the film anyway.
Yeah.
And she's sent to prison. And the first half of the film is basically what she deals with while she's in prison. And there's
all
some...
all her friends.
Yeah.
And, all the carpet munching going on.
Yeah, there's some really horrible scenes in that. But it tells how she gets a reputation in prison and how she comes out, you know, basically being a different person.
Yeah.
And then when she gets out, it's basically the same kind of plan as in either, you know, Old Boy or Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance. She goes about... setting into motion a plan she's been working on for years about how to get back at the guy that blackmailed her, basically.
Right.
And who actually did commit a series of murders. So, what she does is, and I don't know how to say this without giving away the movie, because...
her and someone else break into the guy's apartment, and get the evidence proving that he was the one that murdered dozens of other children.
Apparently videotaped everyone, mm-hmm. every child that he ever murdered.
I think before she did that, though, she tied the guy up and made sure that he was secure, gets the footage, then contacts all of the family members of the kids that were murdered by him.
Mm-hmm.
And they talk about what they're going to do. Are they going to go to the police, or are they going to settle it themselves? And that's basically all we should say.
Yeah, and basically, after that, and the end scene of this movie is probably one of the best end scenes of any horror movie that I've ever seen, I have to say. One of the most original.
Yeah, it's a awesome, last few lines of the movie, too, mm-hmm. between the little girl and Lady Vengeance, I guess you would say. This guy is just fucking killer.
Here's the thing you need to understand about these kind of Asian horror films, and the reason why I think it is we started to like them, even though we used to trash them and stuff. No American filmmaker, or even European filmmaker that I can think of, with maybe a couple exceptions, makes movies visually like this anymore. Nobody has any kind of style the way that these films do.
No artistic look at all.
And there's so many weird, surreal scenes in this movie, where the guy turns into a dog and she shoots him through the head. Yeah. It makes sense in the context of the movie, but nobody in America ever tries to do stuff like that anymore. Oh. They kind of try to cater to gore and.
Like the difference between Asia movies, although there's some Asia movies that stick to a format, namely the ghost stories and all that crap.
That's true, those are just American remakes of Asian movies, though, really.
Completely different. I'm just talking about the Asian movies that are out in Asia. Like the majority of horror movies from Asia are the ghost tales, which a lot of them are exactly like The Ring.
That's true, they are.
Ju-on and all that stuff. But this is completely different because this guy is actually, similar to... The only guy I can halfway compare him to is Quentin Tarantino here as far as visual look.
Mm-hmm, that's true. See, I used to think until I saw these movies, this series anyway, that there were two styles of horror movies. There was one where you had your really boring-ass, plot-driven ghost movies from Asia. And then you had your over-the-top, violent,
gore
movies like Stacy and Junk and all that stuff. But this guy is actually the only guy that I know of that combines those two. Where you actually have a plot, but then you got gore and just really weird visuals and stuff like that too.
The whole trilogy, I would highly recommend. And I'm hopefully looking forward to seeing more of his movies from Tarantasia Extreme. I don't know how many more of them there are out there. The guy's really a freaking talented filmmaker. And, you can't really strictly call these movies horror.
No, I don't even think that would be a horror movie.
No.
It'd be classified as a horror
movie. But I classify him as killer.
Yeah.
And that's all that matters.
Yeah.
But this movie, if you want to criticize it a little bit, it is, unlike the other two, it takes it a long time to get started, to get going. Whereas both the other two, you're right there from the beginning and you don't want to leave your seat or anything.
I will say that it probably does take this movie a lot longer than Old Boy to actually get up to a point where you're just completely hooked. But I really, after watching the first 30 minutes, I wanted to see what happened at the end of this movie. And the ending of the movie is the big payoff in this one. I mean, by far, you're waiting for something spectacular to happen, and unlike the majority of films I see in the U.S., something actually really spectacular does happen at the end of this film.
Right.
At least something that I thought was pretty great for horror films, either.
Pretty cool. So that is Lady Vengeance, and it just came out a couple of weeks ago from Tartan Asia Extreme, one of the greatest Asia, Japanese, whatever, horror movie companies out there. One of the greatest companies out there, period.
It's one of the finest DVD institutions in this land.
That's right. And you can check that out. I would highly recommend it. I think Walmart actually has a ton of Tartan movies.
They do have that one, too.
For $8.88.
Well, yeah, they don't have that one for $8.88, but yeah, right now they do have a special bin of $8.88 Tartan movies.
For $8.88 was one we reviewed that's actually pretty good.
They do, but they've actually got Old Boy. They had Old Boy at one time, I know, and they have that one, too.
Yep.
So you can pick those both up. I recommend them.
I would highly recommend it. So that's that. That's the show this week. I want everybody to have a happy Halloween. And remember to send us your costume pictures if you want to win the H25 DVD, the two-disc.
25 years of tear!
We're giving it away, folks, because we're just that nice. We just love to...
Everything must go, and we're insane.
Yeah. Also, this Tuesday, for a limited time, our commentary track of Cabin Fever will be up.
That's right. We're going, we're going to discuss all the intricacies of that film and Eli Roth's work, and I'm sure everybody will enjoy that.
Yeah. And next week's Kevin Strange, and we're going to have an exclusive look at Don't Go in the Woods DVD. And I don't know what else. We'll be doing all kinds of other shit.
Well, and plus, there's tons of other stuff going to be added to the site, too, eventually. I know that.
You know what sucks, though? Because Halloween ends Tuesday. But the horror never stops at deadpit.com.
That's right.
It's just ongoing.
You know, Halloween comes and goes. But the pit is forever.
With that, I'd like you all to have a happy Halloween. And remember, don't fear
the Reaper.
Oh, the time has come.
Here,
but never gone. Seasons of fear, the Reaper. Sun and the rain can be the day. Come on, baby, don't fear the reaper. Baby, take my hand, don't fear the reaper. Baby, ain't gonna die, don't fear the reaper. Baby, I'm your man.
Oh, my.